Council members are present and will call the meeting to order. And first order of business, we start out with a moment of silence, and just like to start with this. In honor of those that have been devastated by Hurricane Irma, our neighbors in California battling wildfires, and our public safety officers working to protect us, and in the memory of those lives lost and their families that suffering that loss as a result of the horrific mass shooting in Las Vegas, if we could just please take a moment of silence. Thank you. Thank you. Matt, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Thanks, Matt. We don't have any recognitions. We at this point of the agenda, we have a closed session report and nothing to report at this time. We're moving on to mayor and council members' reports, and I'll start off with that, and then we get into presentations. First, I'd just like to thank everybody for wearing pink. That's one of the proclamations that we're going to be talking about, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, during one of our presentations. So great to see everybody sharing the pink and that honor. And then we do have an introduction for our new city managers on the agenda on item C1. So we're looking forward to that as well. And then Marlis, you're going to start us off with some comments as well.
Well, I just first of all wanted to say thank you very much, Mayor Irons, for buying pink for all of us, and we appreciate it, and we're all wearing it, and I'm looking forward to the proclamation. I was going to talk a little bit today about some of the sessions that I attended at the League of California Cities meeting, and instead I decided to talk a little bit about the button I'm wearing, and I just wanted to point it out, and it says, "I love civil discourse." And it's sponsored by the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County. And they are training all of us in how to act civilly in our public discourse. And I think it's just so important for our elected and appointed officials to understand how to treat each other with respect and how to act in a public meeting according to the rules. And they're there to provide everybody with an opportunity to speak and have their voices heard. And so I just wanted to say that this is the way I would like all of us to always carry on our council meeting. So thank you.
Thanks, Marlis. John?
Good evening. Good to be out this evening. It is flu season, so, you know, without warning you that Australia, which is the predictor of what's going to happen here, is having a terrible flu season, which is occurring right now. You have the opportunity to prevent that with about a 98% success rate by getting a flu shot. So I'd be remiss if I didn't remind you. It's a perfect time right now to get it. If you're 65 or older, you should get the high dose flu shot to give you immunity throughout the year. Those under 65, you just need the regular flu shot. And so be healthy and do that. Thanks to those that came to the town hall that I hosted this last week on Wednesday evening. I wanted to speak specifically as to the attorney fees in the city, and I gave, for those that were at the meeting, about an 8 to 10 year history of attorneys' fees when we had an in-house attorney and all the external costs that we had, compared that to our in-house attorney, handed out a grid that showed and broke down those costs so that the truth could get out there. Many things have been said at the podium here that I just wanted to make sure that the things that were said were a little different than maybe what the truth was, and so not that people were not telling the truth on purpose, but information flies sometimes that isn't necessarily what is. And so that is available to you. If you'd like a copy of that, I know it's been floating around on certain social media sites. I'm not going to mention them here. But also at City Hall, we would be happy to make that available. We could probably post that on the website as well. So if you're interested in that, we'll make it available. The other things that were mentioned, obviously, we had a good discussion about the WRF and the wastewater treatment facility. Main concern, obviously, is cost. It's probably why many of you are here tonight. I heard that message very clearly, the concern about the rates and the rates going up again. The 218 process we discussed in some detail, as well as the concern about other cities' costs versus ours, and then some of the details about site selection, et cetera. And so thank you for, again, your input on that. As well, we talked about some other general questions that people asked. And I would just encourage you, you're welcome to come out. There's no fee. It's free. I do it once a quarter, and would encourage you to invite your neighbors and anyone in the city interested in getting information from me only, of course, at that meeting to come on out next time. Thanks, and have a good evening tonight.
Thanks, John. Matt?
Wow, so I guess a free meeting. I wonder if there's any prizes, door prizes. I don't have anything to report from last week's Harbor Advisory Board meeting, but I would like to put a shout-out for something that happened this last Friday, and this was the opening of the Morro Bay High School swimming pool.
Okay.
And
nice job.
A number of council people and the school board members, but there's also 200 or 300 people there in attendance, not to mention the women's national water polo team that was brought there. Our teacher, Morro Bay High School, Andrew Silva, is one of their coaches. And it was a tremendous event. It's been a number of years since we've had a swimming pool here in Morro Bay. And I know from the youngest to the oldest, we've been looking for this for a few decades. With all of that said, I'd also like to put a shout-out to Jen Little from Morro Bay Tourism. She did a great job helping out Coach Silva and the visiting national athletes. And so thank you very much. And that's about it.
Matt, thanks. Rhett?
Good evening. I want to recognize tonight one of our super Morro Bay citizens, and that's Karen Robert, for the many ways that she contributes to our community. When Karen was president of the Morro Bay Friends of the Library, she set in motion the major remodel that the Friends completed 3 years ago. And for many years since then, she's led weekly reading groups at the library. And this year, she set up a free sidewalk library in front of her house where you can take books, leave books, exchange books 24 hours a day. She also started this year the Morro Bay Rock Project. And on the overhead projector are examples of some rocks that came from her creative mind. A few months ago, Karen started painting rocks and leaving them various places around town. These are rocks that I picked up at Centennial Parkway, and other people have been inspired to do the same thing. And it's just you walk along and you look down, and half hidden in a bush is one of these friendly rocks. So I want to recognize and thank Karen for the things that she does to make Morro Bay a better place to live. John DiNunzio last month mentioned that Slocog set up a counter on the bridge across Morro Creek near the pit to count the number of pedestrians and bicyclists who use the bridge. And for an 11-day period between September 22nd and October 3rd, 11 days, 6,000 pedestrians and 2,500 bicyclists crossed the bridge. That's an average of 571 pedestrians a day and 225 bicyclists a day.
That's great.
So a lot of people are using the bridge, and I'm glad that we built it. I'm going to do office hours this coming Saturday. October 14th at Sun and Buns from 9 o'clock until 10 o'clock, and then I'll do a business walk. And one last thing, it is important to me to address a story that was published in the Tribune this morning. And I need to say, I need to tell you that I did not ask Richard Sadowski to resign from the Planning Commission. The council as a whole appoints the commissioners, and it would be improper and unethical for a single council member to ask a commissioner to resign, and I just would never do that. Beyond that, my personal conversations with anyone, including Richard, are private and confidential. So, that's all.
Thanks, Red. And with that, it concludes the announcements and presentations from the council members, and we'll move on to presentations. And if we can just have council, we'll go down to the podium. We have two proclamations and presentations to work with, and we'll just head down to the proclamation, and then we'll invite our Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Leslyn Keith and the survivors, and I'll meet you down at the podium. So thanks, Leslie. Let me get oriented here, and then we'll go through the proclamation, and then you can say a few words as well. And so first off, this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and so it's great to be able to wear pink in celebration and in honor of those that we know and love. And so let me just go through the proclamation, and I'll present that to you, and as well as something else I have as well. This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Moore Bay declaring October 2017 Breast Cancer Awareness Month and honoring the Central Coast Survivors Dragon Boat Team. Whereas the City of Moore Bay is committed to raising awareness about breast cancer and the impact it has on our loved ones, friends, colleagues, community members, and whereas thousands of women and men in our country are diagnosed with breast cancer each year. And whereas a cancer diagnosis is a life-changing and survivors face a long-term and life-limiting effect of the illness and its treatments, including physical, emotional, psychological, legal, and financial issues. And whereas the Central Coast Survivors Dragon Boat Team, a program of the Central Coast Dragon Boat Association, was founded in 2007, and has over 100 participants composed of both cancer survivors and supporters, most of whom are breast cancer survivors. And whereas the Central Coast Dragon Boat Team, though through their programs, promote health and well-being for all cancer survivors and their loved ones while enjoying the sport of dragon boating in the Estero Bay. And whereas the Central Coast Survivors Dragon Boat Team held their first Dragon Boat Festival as part of their Harbor Festival on October 7th, 2017, with over 100 cancer survivors and supporters in attendance. The day was highlighted with a breast cancer survivor ceremony held at Tidelands Park at 12 noon. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Moore Bay does hereby proclaim October 2017 as Breast Cancer Awareness Month and recognizes the important impact of the Central Coast Survivors Dragon Boat Team has on council survivors and supporters in our community. That's the proclamation. Pardon me for my hesitation. And here's the proclamation for you all, the survivors. And there's also one other gift that I'd like to present to the survivors. And I'll just read it to you. And I'm privileged to be the messenger. This was a gift that was crafted by an artisan pen maker, resident citizen here in Morro Bay, and wanted to make sure that this gift was made anonymously because he wanted to make sure that this gift represented the purpose, not the person that made the gift. So let me read what's on the card. It says, "Your breast cancer awareness pen. has generated a contribution to an organization that supports research for a cure for breast cancer. Your pen has been meticulously hand-turned on a lathe by an artisan crafter and will make a wonderful memory and keepsake. And it's handmade by a Morro Bay artisan. And we'll leave it at that. And I'll just slide this off for you. And then it's for you to open and for your team. And it's there's a pink hue to the pen itself. Yeah, thank you. And thank you for all you do. Leslyn, from council and all the city, we just, thank you for what you do. And it's an honor. And this is Breast Cancer Month, Awareness Month, and we're glad to have you here at the podium. If you have a few words, we'd love to hear from you.
Okay. But I would like to say really quick that we just did come from paddling on the water, and so that's why we're dressed this way. We just finished our practice. But here are some of our paddlers with us here tonight, many of them breast cancer survivors. So this is really means a lot to us to have this proclamation and be able to make this presentation tonight. Thank you so much for having us. And then after the proclamation, what do you like to do? Okay. Just a few minutes, yeah. Okay. Just got a few things to show you about our team. I'm the volunteer coach for the team. And so just a little background on our team. We started in 2007 at just for breast cancer survivors. We teamed up with Subsea Tours, who had the boats, and a local physical therapist, and we put together a team, and we just kind of made it up because we had no idea what we were doing. But then we got to go to Dragon Boat Camp and figure out what we were doing, and then hooked up with Team Survivor, which is promotes exercise for women cancer survivors. And then eventually, you can see there in 2014, we became our own nonprofit, so the Central Coast Dragon Boat Association. So now we are for all women cancer survivors, but also all of their loved ones, supporters, friends, family, because everybody wants to drag a boat, we discovered. And so it really all started for breast cancer survivors because the study was done by a physician who wanted to see if it was okay for women after breast cancer surgery to do strenuous exercise and would they get lymphedema. And it turned out I'm a lymphedema therapist. That's my main practice, so I found that really interesting. And it turned out you could do strenuous exercise and it wouldn't necessarily give you lymphedema. And so he did that by having them all dragon boat. And from that, the women thought it was such a fabulous thing that it spread, and now there's over 100 teams worldwide just for breast cancer survivors, and that's how we started out. So here's our dragon boat, one of them. We have two. And so it does have its roots in China, and so it is a 9-meter or 40-foot canoe. There's 10 benches, so you have two paddlers to each bench, and so you have 20 paddlers on the boat. And then you have a steers person who stands in the back. I think Sean come today? He's one of our local Morro Bay residents who steers the boat for us a lot. And then that's where I sit in the front on that little tiny chair and hit the drum and keep everybody in time. Let me tell you, the first time I sat there was kind of scary. And then we go to Dragon Boat Festivals and compete. And so we always enter the cancer survivor division. A lot of times they will have something just for breast cancer survivors. And then we'll also do women's mixed so that our men can compete as well. And then most of our team is over 40 and a lot of us over 50. So we a lot of times will do the Grandmaster division. And then you can see right there, that's our very first festival we just had in Tidelands Park last Saturday, which was pretty fabulous. As you know, it was gorgeous weather last weekend, and so we had a fabulous time. And then we do go to festivals, and we plan on winning, and we often do. So you can see one of our paddlers there, Missy, holding her silver medal for the breast cancer division that we took second place in the last festival we went to. And we happen to qualify for the World Games that are going to be happening in Hungary next year. So we are currently fundraising for that because we want to send our team to compete in the breast cancer survivor division in Hungary. So we're pretty excited about that. We are fundraising, just in case you're wondering, and you can go to our website. So our team has over 100 paddlers, and they're composed of cancer survivor supporters, men and women, all ages, all fitness levels, and some people who have never exercised or done a team sport in their life, and people who are triathletes, so everything in between. So if you are a local resident, cancer survivor or not, don't worry, you can join us. That's our last festival, just a team shot of us wearing our racing shirts, and after we were winning a bunch of races. And there we are again, setting out on, I think this is one of the smaller boats. It's just a 10-person boat. We do have lots of opportunities to paddle, and it's not all for racing. I concentrate on the race practices, but we have what we call the Zen paddle. Just want to go out and look at the otters and bird watch. But we also have training practices, so you want to learn how to dragon boat, you can do that. And then we have people interested in learning how to steer the boat, because it is a lot of fun being back there and control the boat. So we have practices just to learn how to steer. And I asked the team to tell me, what did this do for you? Why do you enjoy being a member of our dragon boat team? And these are just quotes of what people said. It's a fun way to exercise and feel part of a team. It's the camaraderie and being with a bunch of wonderful women. It's a boost to the psychological and physical well-being. It inspires others who are currently going through treatment. We do have people who come out, they're currently in chemotherapy or some kind of treatment for their cancer, and sometimes they just sit on the boat. They can't paddle, it's okay, but they're with the rest of us. It's learning how to work as a team and to reach our group goals as we support each other's individual goals. There we're celebrating right after we just won a race. It's keeping our bodies fit, strong, and flexible. We're stretching out and getting ready for a race there. Together we share our journey in the fight against cancer with friendship, love, and the knowledge that a dragon boat team, we will stay strong mentally, physically, emotionally, and that we will survive. I think we just won a race right there, too. And there's a little more information about us. You can go to our website, ccdba.org. Email us, survivalwars@gmail.org. We're looking for more paddlers. Please join us. Thank you so much for having us here tonight.
Thanks, survivors, and Leslyn, thank you. We have one more proclamation for our presentation tonight. We're going to invite Christine Johnson up. And this is a proclamation for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Okay, can I read the proclamation first? Okay, all right, thanks. All right, thanks. This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Moore Bay declaring October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Whereas domestic violence is a systemic pattern of abusive behavior to gain power and control through the use of violence, physical violence, sexual violence, threats, and/or emotional abuse used by one intimate partner against another, therefore, is now more accurately called intimate partner violence, or IPV, by those who work with this issue. And whereas the Women's Shelter Program of San Luis Obispo County strives to increase public awareness and understanding of intimate partner violence and the needs of survivors, And whereas intimate partner violence affects women, men, and children of all racial, ethnic, cultural, social, religious, and economic groups, and in a single day, Safe Houses serves almost 5,800 women and children in California. And whereas every minute, an average of 20 people are physically abused by intimate partners in the United States, which equates to 10 million abuse victims annually. And whereas California law enforcement agencies received 162,302 domestic violence-related calls in 2015, and intimate partner violent accounts for 15% of all violent crime in the United States. And whereas approximately 40% of California women experience physical intimate partner violence in their lifetimes, while one in three female murder victims in the United States are killed by an intimate partner. And whereas children exposed to intimate partner violence in the home experience long-term consequences such as difficulty at school, substance abuse, and serious adult health problems. And whereas intimate partner violence has a significant economic impact, as it is estimated 8 million days of paid work are lost nationwide yearly as a result of intimate partner violence. And whereas among families, intimate partner violence is the third leading cause of homelessness. And whereas the Women's Shelter Program of San Luis Obispo County served nearly 800 survivors in 2016 in our community to provide essential life-saving services for the survivors and their children fleeing violence. And whereas survivors of intimate partner violence embody incredible strength and resilience to overcome trauma and abuse to build lives free of violence. And whereas the City of Morbay strongly supports the efforts of the Women's Shelter Program of San Luis Obispo County and its partners to work to reduce intimate partner violence in San Luis Obispo County through prevention, education, increased awareness, and holding perpetrators who commit acts of violence responsible for their actions. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Morbay City Council does hereby proclaim October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month in the City of Morbay. Thanks, Christine, for your work, and here's the proclamation, and if you can help us understand a little bit more about what you do. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Should I go to the side? I will follow along the leader this that got us started. My name is Christine Johnson, and I am the Director of Development and Communications at the Women's Shelter Program, and I'm also a Morbay resident, so I'm proud to be here and proud of my city to recognize this important month of awareness. On behalf of the Board of Directors and the staff of the Women's Shelter Program, I'm honored to receive your proclamation this evening and recognizing October as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. You may know that for 38 years, the Women's Shelter has been serving survivors of domestic violence, also called intimate partner violence. What you may not know is the Women's Shelter was started right here in Morbay, with two women who opened their home to abused women and their children in 1977, something we can all be proud of. From that time until today, the services of the Women's Shelter have grown from a single safe house furnishing emergency shelter and a series of programs that include still includes emergency shelter, a 24/7 crisis line, counseling, legal assistance, Latina services, transitional housing, a child abuse treatment program, and therapy in local schools. Thanks to our partnership with San Luis Coastal School District, we also provide trauma counseling services to children at 8 different school sites in the district. If this sounds familiar to you, it may be that you just read about the Women's Shelter Program in the most recent edition of Morbay Life. So I have to thank Ruth Ann Angus for her visit to our agency and for helping us spread the word about our services here in Morbay. If you're wondering how to help yourself or others, here are 4 quick ways. First, if someone tells you they are being hurt by their spouse or their partner or their ex, believe them. It's so simple. It's the first step toward healing and safety, but you'd be amazed how often people find the courage to speak up and then they're not believed. Second, make a phone call, 805-781-6400. That's our 24/7 confidential crisis line. We're here to help you. Third, join us at 2 events this month. Each of you on the council, along with the city manager, the interim city manager, soon to have a new one, and the police chief received invitations to our events. This Thursday, October 12th, 6:30, is a candlelight vigil at Mission Plaza. We'll honor those whose lives have been lost and honor the strength of the survivors. October 29 at 4:15 is a special film event, screening of an award-winning documentary called Private Violence, followed by a Q&A with the filmmaker at the Palm Theater in SLO. And lastly, you can donate your time as a volunteer to answer our crisis call line or your treasure. Cash donations are essential to sustaining our work, and funds are always needed. I'd like to close with a testimonial from one of our clients. The Women's Shelter Program has saved my life. Without the Women's Shelter Program, I would still be homeless and living in my car. I now have a home and two jobs, and my boys and I are safe and secure. That's why we do the work we do. Thanks for helping us do it.
Okay, thanks everybody. Great way to start off a meeting. With that, our next item on the up is a public comment, and we open our public comment with a business spot. We're going to invite Nick Martinez of Bottle Liquor to open up our public comment. Come on up, Nick. Thanks.
Thank you for having me. Mr. Mayor, distinguished council members, and of course the conscientious assembly here. My name is Nicholas Martinez, and I'm here tonight to represent Harper's Bottled Liquor and Deli and tell everybody about our increasing offerings. We're located at 999 Main Street here in Morro Bay, and we're open from 6 a.m. till midnight, 5 days a week, and until 1 a.m. on Fridays and Saturdays. Though we are most recognized as a liquor store, we are much more of a Morro Bay experience, a claim I believe supported by many locals and tourists, as well as by our neighbors in Los Osos and Cayucas, Atascadero and Paso Robles, who come to see us each weekend. Our customer base is growing, and I'd like to thank all of those friendly faces for their repeated business. Bottle Liquor has been owned for the last 36 years by the Harper family, and for the last 17 and a half, I've had the honor of managing the store. 8 years ago, we implemented a deli that's been received with great hospitality. But it's important to us to showcase what has kept us around long enough to make all these wonderful adjustments and offerings to our community, which has been our wide selection of spirits and cordials, our selection of over 400 wines, and our beer offerings of more than 300 craft and import beers. We also offer a small selection of bait and tackle, as well as groceries and souvenirs. We offer locally brewed coffee. We sell lottery and newspapers. And we're going to be here for a long time to come. So that's about as quick as I could get it all in, guys.
Thanks,
I know,
Nick.
You want to keep going. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Nick. Thanks for taking the time coming out. With that, folks, we I'll go through our speakers list. First up for public comment is Ken Green, and then Jeff. Oh, Jeff Bacon. Sorry, Jeff. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, council members, staff, I'm Ken Green, a citizen of Morro Bay. I'd like to briefly address city accounting practices. And, at Dr. Heading's town hall meeting last Wednesday, he put together a lovely grid that covered expenses dealing with the city's legal issues, lawyers, from fiscal year 07-08 to the current fiscal year. And I'd like to applaud Dr. Heading as being sort of a poster child of what we would like to see from city accounting. And I'm stumbling here because I had everything written out, but he kind of stole my fire, so I'm ad-libbing a little bit. In any event, the grid is available on request, and comment that he made at the town hall meeting would certainly be illuminating on top of it. But in any event, I'm taking this opportunity to say it's just a great thing, and I hope a harbinger of things to come. As far as problems are concerned, Dr. Heading commented that it took him a great amount of effort to pull the numbers together. He had to dig, and then he had to work with the numbers and the categories to come up with this grid and make sense of it. So having to work that hard in order to get information that should be publicly available and readily available represents a problem. I asked at your last meeting if you would start a program of tracking finances using the water reclamation facility as a test case. I'm once again asking that you authorize staff to obtain whatever training is needed in order to track income and spending on a monthly basis. That way the staff will know the financial status of the city and while it is happening, and so will you, which will help you with your decision making. And the same goes for us citizens. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. Jeff Bacon, and then Betty Winholz.
Hi, I'm Jeff Bacon, a Morro Bay resident, and I'm here for John Elliott, who has been canvassing the city in regards with the trick-or-treat parade and contest and all the things we do. It'll be coming up on Halloween. So there's 5 days left for the businesses to sign up. John and some of his crew have been out canvassing all the neighborhoods yesterday and all day today. He's at work now, John. But it's our fourth annual trick-or-treat, and it's for kids through K and 8. Grade, and it's Tuesday, October 31st at 3 to 5:30 p.m. And let's see. From some of the photos last year, some older kids at the bottom there that I'm a little nervous about. But it's really a great event, and it really brings a lot of traffic into businesses that wouldn't normally have everybody coming in and out. And So. Basically, there's a map to pick up at Grandma's Frozen Yogurt. The parade will be on Morro and Main Street at 5 o'clock, the costume contest with prizes. I think this year we are very excited about having the police have their haunted mansion. So we're going to have trolley service from Grandma's Yogurt out to the police station and back, where the police officers, correct me if I'm wrong, will be the haunted version of scariness. And it should be fun. John and his crew together. And so the White Caps are going to be the band that are going to be giving a special performance with the costume contest. So if you haven't signed up, if you're a business, you know of a business, please do so. And that I really am thrilled to be part of this and happy to have anybody with any questions get a hold of us. Okay? Thank you.
Great, Jeff. Thank you. Betty Winholz, and then Cynthia Hawley.
Good evening. My name's Betty Winholz.
I'm here on behalf of Mr. Patrick Sparks, who's been called out of town, and I'm asking that the City Council agendize a 15-minute presentation on its October 24th meeting, regular meeting, by Mr. Sparks regarding his research on the sewer plant site. 10 years ago, the City Council that I was on was united in upgrading the sewer plant on its current site. Then the FEMA map came along, and our opinions split. Today, a Morro Bay resident, Mr. Sparks, believes that he has found a legal way to upgrade the sewer plant with the bonus of Title 22 water on the sewer plant's current site. Now, this is not my preferred site, but it's preferred to my and my neighbors and my friends in town having to leave our town because we won't be able to afford our bills. After the public and the City Council hear the presentation, the Council should refer this documentation to the City Attorney or an expert on state law to see if it's even legal. This examination does not interfere with or stop any other work on South Bay Boulevard, neither does it prolong your timeline. If it is found to be legal, the Coastal Commission concerns regarding the natural hazards, I believe, can be mitigated. One, the maps from their original project back in 2008-2009 show that the impact of sea level rise doesn't affect this property for 80 years. This plant will not last 80 years. We know that flooding can be mitigated by caissons. We know that liquefaction from an earthquake can be mitigated with new technology. And like Oceano, we're not on the beach, but we're close to the beach, and the Coastal Commission gave them 30 years to move their plant inland. So if we build a 30-year plant, we're within our rights to be there. So due to the financial burden the City Council is placing on us ratepayers, I believe the Council is obligated to explore every avenue. To quote the City Council minutes from December 13th, 2016, quote, "This council discussed the importance of bringing the project to a scope that meets affordability of the community. That cost must be a primary consideration," unquote. Before I sit down, I want to make a comment regarding C1. I did not send you my specific comments regarding it. It's the contract with the new city manager. But I have to acknowledge your extreme generosity in his contract. A personal phone, $450 a month for gas, for his transportation, bringing him at a level 3 on a scale of 5, and after 6 months, raising him to perhaps a step 4. That's a lot of money. And on top of that, he still gets a cost of living increase, even though he's making $176,000 a year. Thank you.
Thanks, Betty. Cynthia Hawley. And then Anne-Marie Schnetzer.
I'm Cynthia Hawley, representing the Morro Bay Action Team. This is a formal request under Morro Bay Municipal Code Sections 208020 and 208025 to agendize an amendment of the Municipal Code to require a monthly accounting report. Some months ago, the Morro Bay Action Team informed you that the city did not produce any monthly report on expenditures, not for the public, not for the staff, not for the council. It's impossible for you to carry out your fiduciary duty to the citizens of Morro Bay without knowing how much money is spent and for what purposes on a monthly basis. In fact, as we've mentioned before, a monthly report on finances is mandated by Section 41004 of the California Government Code, which requires, quote, "Regularly, at least once each month, the city treasurer shall submit to the city clerk a written report and accounting of all receipts, disbursements, and fund balances. He shall file the copy with the legislative body." To ensure that this and future city councils carry out this critical government code requirement for the monthly accounting report, the Morro Bay Action Team has prepared an amendment to Title II of the city's municipal code by adding the following to Section 216090 entitled Finance Director. Quote, to Pursuant to California Government Code, Section 41004, each month the City Finance Director, acting as City Treasurer, shall prepare and submit to the City Clerk and file with the City Council a written report and accounting of all receipts, expenditures, disbursements, and fund balances, report and accounting, for the immediately prior month, and shall cause the report and accounting to be attached to the agenda for the second City Council meeting in that reporting month. The use of the word shall means must, indicating the act is mandatory. Pursuant to Morro Bay Municipal Code, allowing members of the public to place an item on a future agenda, the Morro Bay Action Team requests that during the declaration of future agenda items in Section D of tonight's agenda, a council member or members request that this proposed amendment to the Municipal Code be placed on a future agenda with a date certain for City Council discussion and possible adoption. Again, our request is for this to be done tonight under Agenda Section D as allowed by Morro Bay Municipal Code. Thank you.
Thank you. Anne Marie Schnetzer? That's the final speaker slip I have for public comment tonight.
Good evening. My name is Anne-Marie Schnetzler, and I'm a citizen of Morro Bay. I want to thank all the members of the City Council to allow me and us to come and speak regularly at those meetings.
Anne-Marie, can you speak closer into the microphone, please? Thank
yes.
you. Thank you.
I have some inquiries. The first one is I'm asking whether you feel you can support that proposal or suggestion from the attorney, Patrice Barthes. I don't know the gentleman, but I heard of his proposal with caissons for the water treatment plant, and I think that it's a good idea to examine whatever he has to offer, and maybe that can be rejected, but at least we would have looked at it. And so I'm asking that you put it on the 24th of October agenda. Secondly, I support and respectfully request that the city expenditure be itemized on a monthly financial report made available to City Council members and to Morro Bay citizens as well. I've been coming and participating in those council meetings for a while, and I do realize that our input, for some of us, has not been effective so far. I regret it, but I believe in democracy, and I want to participate in it. I will therefore continue to come, suggest, nudge, encourage you to listen to citizens' input. Hopefully, we may be able to be heard better in the future. Finally, I'm not going to speak for very long. On a lighter note, I also suggest that since we are going to have dispensaries in Morro Bay to distribute marijuana products for medical purposes, that the two businesses entities that will be able to do this, I will ask them to carry cannabis varieties that enhance the ability of our citizens, and in particular, the ability of accountants to provide timely and relevant monthly financial reports to all of us. Thank you.
Anne-Marie?
Yes.
I didn't get the first, I couldn't hear the first one. I heard the city expenditures, but the first item, I couldn't hear what you were saying, please.
It's about the proposal of Mr. Spark. I think it's worth listening to.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes our public comment. I'm looking out, not seeing anyone else for public comment. I don't have any more speaker slips. I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. Any other follow-up on those, any comments there from anyone? To my right, to my left? Seeing none? Okay, we'll move on to consent. And I don't have any speaker slips for consent, but anybody for public comment on consent? Seeing none, I'll close public comment for consent. And items, we have seven items on consent. I would just ask to pull item A7. Is there any other items from council that would like to be pulled?
I also wanted to pull A7, and I just have a couple of typos to correct in some of the minutes, which I can do offline if that's more appropriate.
Okay, we can... We can do that.
Yeah, it's they're minor corrections.
Okay. And so we have item A7. So I would take a motion to approve all items on the consent agenda.
So moved.
With the exception of A7.
Yeah, so moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Mr. Davis, second by Mr. Hedding. Any further discussion? None. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Item A7. I wanted to pull this and had a discussion with Rob Leibick, our Public Works Director, on this item, and just wanted to have the discussion with council as well. The reason I pulled it was one, it's great that we're moving ahead on the pavement process and we're bringing that back, but I was looking at the line items, that a list of items that were on there, and I brought up a concern I had and whether or not we could address some of the crosswalks within our business districts that have potholes and such, and I was wondering how we'd be able to look at this list. And particularly, I was looking at a couple items there. If we eliminated those, would we be able to use those same funds to address some safety issues? And so that was the premise of the conversation. But I just wanted to look to Mr. Leibick to follow up, because as it is, we really do need to approve this tonight, but there are some options for us.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We talked earlier about perhaps reallocating some of these funds to prioritize streets with on the pedestrian path of travel for some work. A couple of things, the methods and practices that we're using here are mainly sealing techniques, and they're not going to do work on those crosswalks with major divots in them, and so the microsurfacing and even the triple layer tape seal wouldn't be enough to do that work. We have an obligation to one of our funding partners also through distribution of some money through SLOCOG that's required to be spent on our arterial and collector streets. So we have to spend that money on our arterial and collector streets. One thing we did talk about was we have some unearned local transportation fund revenue that's distributed for our transit system that wasn't needed for that, and it can be used for street purposes. About $73,292 that is not programmed this year. So we propose to come back at mid-year and bring a project forward to use that money for street work. Additionally, we have programmed with this project about $40,419 for contingency work to basically cover the difference in quantities. I believe much of that money will be available. And then there was about $11,000 that in the kitty, so to speak, of our funding that wasn't enough to really do anything with to add to the streets. So that was just would stay in the pot. So we would bring those three funding items that add up to about $120,000 at mid-year to program for additional streets work this spring, focusing on pedestrian path of travel, if council so desires.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. Any questions from?
Yeah, I wanted you to just clarify, and this is really for the sake of some folks who have sent emails, the source of the funds for this. There's some misunderstanding that it's all general funds. I just wanted you to clarify where the money's coming from, if you would.
Sure. If we go to the financial impact section, we have a summary of that in there, but I'll briefly summarize that summary.
Please, thank you.
About $530,000 comes from our local sales tax, our Measure Q funds. We're going to have about $61,000, which will be the first allocation through the SB1 Fix Our Roads Fund. And then $245,000 was the amount that I mentioned that came from our funding partners at SLOCOG. and what amounts to about $75,100 in grant funds through CalRecycle for using rubberized asphalt products. Basically, when you get rid of those tires, they get ground up and mixed with asphalt and oils, and we use that to put back on our streets. So that those are our funding sources for the street project. Unfortunately, no general funds go into these major street programs.
All right. And when will this work be done?
We're working with our contractor right now. They're proposing to mobilize, should the council approve this item, the last week in October. It'll probably take them 2 weeks worth of work to do, followed up with the striping work about a week later after these coatings cure.
Okay. And so far you've been satisfied with the work that this contractor is doing for
us?
Yes,
we have. We had a little bit of a rough start last year, but I think we have that under control now, and we're ready to proceed forward with the next phase of this indefinite quantity, indefinite delivery contract.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions then, John?
Rob, just a quick question on the funding that you mentioned that was available that the mayor had spoken about with regard to fixing the pedestrian ways. Is that specifically funding that's earmarked for purposes such as that, or is it available for other things just from?
It's the LTF, Local Transportation Fund, can be used for two purposes, transit or roads. So you have two options. This was not needed to fund our transit services, so it's eligible to use for roads. It's a split that many cities do with their LTF funds. Use part of it to fund transit. Typically, we use almost all of ours to fund transit. We've had an accumulation of unearned revenue.
So those funds could not be utilized for offsetting some of the CalPERS issue in terms of our liability?
No.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, so the question was, coming back at mid-year, we can agendize it, future agenda items, or just get consensus from council to give direction to staff to come back with the item as discussed at mid-year budget to review a budgeting a paving option for pedestrian and crosswalks. Would that be accurate?
Yes, to basically amend our capital program to add this as a project and to amend this year's budget.
Okay. So if there's consensus for that, then we could just give direction at this time? Is there consensus from council? Okay. All right. So with that, we'd go ahead and with unanimous consent, we'd go consensus, we would direct staff to come back at mid-year with options to do crosswalk and pedestrian paving in the business sectors and with the LTF funds. Okay.
Got it.
All right. Okay,
so
great.
Do
you want
to
move
motion
A8
to
as well?
Approve A7 then?
A8.
We approved all. We approved all items on the agenda except for A7.
Right. So okay. I move we approve A7
okay.
With the.
So we have a motion by Ms. McPherson, a second by Mr. Heading. Any further discussion? None. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Great. That concludes our consent. Next item on the agenda is our public hearing for tonight. This is the adoption of resolution number 5617, approving a concept conditional use permit number UPO 448 for 945 Embarcadero. The project includes remodeling of existing restaurant, harbor walk, and public access.
Get this situated here in a second and
start. We're looking for Scott and Cindy, and thank you.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the council. Tonight's item is public hearing for 945 Embarcadero. This is city lease site 96 and 96W. It is located, the nearest intersection is Harbor Street. This is a project for concept plan conditional use permit. The image on the screen shows the vicinity map of the city lease site. It is also the location of the existing House of Juju restaurant. And per the city's plan development overlay requirements, the Planning Commission reviewed this project on September 5th. They forwarded a favorable recommendation to the City Council for approval of the concept plan, and it is now before the Council for approval of that plan. Just to walk you through a little bit of the project, the proposed development includes three main areas. The first area is indoors, and that would convert the existing business's rear storage area for new additional interior dining and bar area. It would also add a 71-square-foot single-story addition on the north side of the building to accommodate relocated trash enclosure, which is currently on the rear side facing the water. The second area would be public access improvements per the city's waterfront master plan and also Coastal Commission requirements. The applicant is proposing public lateral access improvements of 10 feet along the bayside, and also a widened angled access leading from Anchor Park South, and I'll show you a slide in just a moment. And then the third component is repair, and that is repair of the seawall that's under the existing wharf, and it would also repair five pilings that are currently existing. No new pilings are proposed. Here's a street view image of the restaurant. And this is the Harbor View area where you do see those pilings and the existing wharf. Here's a site plan which describes the proposed work. Just to orientate you, Embarcadero Road is on the right, Anchor Park is to the north, and then the water side. And this shaded area right here represents the scope of work on the interior of the building. And this pop-out area here would be the 71-square-foot addition. And then here's just a little close-up view so you can see the new dining area and bar area for an enhanced restaurant experience. Here is the widened angled accessway. And so what that would do is it would add decking to the existing wharf area, and it would extend out over the revetment. Currently, the way that the angled currently the way that the public access is it does a right angle turn as you're heading south from Anchor Park, and then it wraps around. It doesn't really give quite the impression that this is open public access. It's kind of a bland appearance, and this would invite the public to walk back there consistent with the waterfront master plan. And just to give you a little easier image to read, the red arrows just delineate the path of travel that one might take. And then this arrow is pointing to the applicant's proposal for an outdoor public seating counter with a glass windscreen. This would be open to the public with no purchase necessary for the restaurant. That's consistent with Coastal Commission requirements and also city requirements as well. And, of course, the project's been conditioned accordingly as well. The next component of the project is the proposed park improvements. The applicant has proposed a new sidewalk leading from Embarcadero to the lateral access, also benches, a succulent garden, and new bike rack, along with new coastal access signage to inform the public of this improved access. And I have some slides here. Yeah, the arrows pointing to the sidewalk. So I have some slides here just to show you visual simulations of existing and proposed. This is an existing view from the north, and then proposed. And you see the in this area here how that facade changes with the refuse storage area. Existing and proposed. And then the public seating counter here with the windscreen. And then one thing I would like to point out is parking. The proposed remodel of the restaurant would ordinarily trigger parking requirements for the expanded customer dining area. The applicant did request at the Planning Commission hearing parking in lieu fee waiver per City Council Resolution 5416. So that has been placed in the project. It is a condition in the resolution before you. And that would waive parking in lieu requirements as of the time of the City Council's concept plan approval. Those Planning Commission conditions that the Planning Commission reviewed, overall they supported the project. They are recommending that the Council approve the concept plan. They did add two conditions to the project, which are on the screen before you. The first condition, which is noted in your resolution, is condition 14, would be to require that the Harbor Walk decking match elevation to the lease site to the south. The lease site to the south recently completed work. It's the Held Harbor Center, and the nearest business is the Poppies. And then the second condition would be an encroachment permit required for off-site off-lease improvements, referring to those improvements in the park. And so here's an image of what I just referred to as condition 14. So this shows you the elevation transition between the adjacent lease sites. And so what this would require the applicant to do would be to raise the elevation so that there would not be this ramp area here. And then I have a picture of Anchor Park. This is the area adjacent to the restaurant where the improvements would be made. Currently, there's a very narrow sidewalk right there, and it slopes down toward the building, so it has really poor drainage. That would go away with the landscaping that would be done in that area. And then the sidewalk that's shown on the plans would be between the bench and the railing there. Staff supports the recommendation of the Planning Commission as conditioned, and staff's recommendation is that the Council conditionally approve the project by adopting City Council Resolution 5617 for the project depicted on plans dated August 13th and as revised on September 2nd, which shows the five pilings. And that concludes my presentation. And I did want to add that if the Council desires, I do have some additional photographs that I took today that show more wider pictures of the park. And I'm happy to show those upon request. Thank you.
Okay, great. So we do have the applicant here, so we'll open up for questions from council, and then we can invite the applicant or agent representative to come up and speak. And then following that, and I don't have any speaker slips for this item for public comment, so at that point, you do have one? I just have C1 here. I didn't see any. Is okay. All right, so following questions from council, we'll open up for the applicant to speak on this project, and then we can conclude that and then open up for discussion from council. So I'll look to my left. Red, do you want to start us off on questions?
Yeah, I don't have any questions.
Okay. Matt?
Cindy, I do have a question about that triangular section of the I don't know, it wouldn't necessarily be Harbor Walk extension, but that one triangle section, would that encroach on any other city right-of-ways, or is that city property as it extends over that property?
It is technically city property. It's off the applicant's lease site, so it would be an extension of Anchor Park that is jutting out westward over the revetment.
So would we, like, in with that, consider that some sort of because looking at the pictures, I'm like, okay, that could be considered an improvement. And is that how we, the city, would look at it, as an improvement over that? Because I understand that walkway, widening it.
Your mic.
Sorry.
There you go.
Just making sure that it would be appropriate to extend that over. And then would we just accept that as the city, as improvements, or how would that work?
So that would get tied into the lease negotiations that the applicant would have with Harbor Department in the city. And so the lease site's one of the smaller lease sites in the city. So because of the way that the lease negotiation process works, there was a limited amount of work that the applicant could do, especially maintaining it as a single story. As part of the initial conversations with the city, the applicant proposed to make improvements to the park. That's what the intent was behind Planning Commission's condition to get an encroachment permit, is it's those improvements that are made to the park then are permitted through this encroachment permit process.
And I guess looking on into the future, if that improvement upon that extension into the harbor walk, making sure then that the maintenance on that would fall on the lessee rather than the city, I guess is what I'm also leading up towards.
It's not currently in the resolution that that maintenance requirement be on the applicant. That likely would come out of the lease negotiation process, but it certainly could be added. We did that at Rose's Landing, for instance. That went to council a few months ago, and they were making off-lease improvements with that project. And there is planning did get a condition from the Harbor Department about that, depending on the type of material and the type of work, that the applicant might be required to maintain those improvements.
All right. John?
Thank you, Cindy, for the presentation, and thanks for the staff report. Do we have an engineering report on the seawall issue, and could you just explain what that said and what condition that seawall is in?
Certainly. So the applicant's project description include the seawall repair. They did not give us a full-blown seawall or engineering report analysis. So I'm going to let Scott maybe answer the rest of that question.
So they did provide it in their plans for the repair. Is the repair proposals that are part of the application are from Smith Structural Group. So a structural engineer prepared the plans for those, and they will have to submit engineering work when they go through the building permit process.
But from the standpoint of the city and being concerned about another lease site that has major issues with the revetment and some issues that we're going through right now, I guess my question is, how can we be assured now that that seawall is in good enough condition that it's not going to, cave in or... And then is this process that we're going through to do these repairs simply based upon mitigation of anything that's been identified or something that's added that probably will help maintain it for a longer period of time? What I'm getting at is, do we have any problems with that seawall that might indicate further action that's necessary?
So we don't have the engineering report that would go along with the plans, but the plans were prepared by a structural engineer to address issues they have on the site related to maintenance. We will get those reports when they come into building. We just don't have them in front of us. The applicant's in the audience, and we'll be able to answer some of the questions about where they stand with that and what analysis that Smith Structural Group did to necessitate the improvements that are proposed.
I'll save that for the applicant and let the applicant address it. Thanks. I didn't mean to put you on the spot with that. My other question is that so we collect community development impact fees that I believe are supposed to be used for city park improvements. And I'm wondering, if you could tell us how much we have in the fund and how we prioritize or determine projects and why possibly this project isn't being done out of those funds, and we possibly could look at other improvements that might be more strategic long-term for the city. So
we have two pots of money as it relates to that. We have park in lieu fees that we get, and there's about $9,800 in that account. And then we have our general governmental impact fees in the accumulation fund. So that's in the adopted city council budget, FY17-18. And in that account currently, there is $778,000 in change in there. And out of that, there are projected revenues and projected expenditures. The only projected expenditure for FY17-18 is in relation to storm drain maintenance to the tune of about $112,000. There are no other projected expenditures out of the account, so the council didn't budget or direct any repairs or any improvements to parks. So were the council to go down that road, we would have to do a budget amendment and those types of things, not only develop plans, we'd have to go through a budget amendment process to identify what funds would go where and how we would spend those.
Got it. And so just for my edification, then annually at council direction at budget time would be the appropriate time to look at issues such as park improvements that might be utilized to come out of this fund and prioritized for that capital year?
Potentially, yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. But right now there are significant funds, and if the council were interested in seeing other improvements, they could be directed as such, I assume.
Yeah, there's. I mean, and right now the current adopted budget includes projected revenues out of administration, police, fire, streets, storm drain maintenance, and parks. And the parks' projected revenue is around $21,000 and change.
Okay. When is the last time we did a thorough structural analysis of the building as the landowner? Just curious in terms of the building and its structural integrity. And if there are other issues that might be popping up as a result.
I might hand this over to our harbor director, Aaron.
We have not done a structural analysis, nor do we normally do structural analysis of leaseholders' buildings. Back in 2010, 11, 12, when the tenant did a pretty significant remodel of that building, if you remember, it was stripped down to the studs. They were initially going to do sort of a small remodel, and then later down the line demolish that whole. The original project was to do a small remodel on that building, get it up and running for a few years, and then demolish it somewhere down the line and rebuild completely. Well, once they started stripping it down and getting into the project, they decided to keep on with the existing building. The bones were good enough, and then they did fire upgrades and a bunch of good stuff to it, brought it to the state that it's at now. So it's gone through some pretty thorough construction and structural review as part of that whole permitting process to be built out as it is today.
Good. And have we done any PM analysis or review of the building in the last 5 years or so to make sure that PMs are being done on a routine basis?
We did our last five-year just basically site review about 5 years ago now. We're due to start doing another one now, and any deficiencies. I don't know what the deficiencies were then, if there were any, because that was about the time that they were all torn apart and doing remodeling, so any deficiencies they would have, they would have corrected at that time.
Good. Thank you. I'll save the other question then for the applicant.
Thanks, Marlos.
Okay, yeah, I just have a couple questions. I did have the same question as Matt about Anchor Park and who would be responsible for maintenance if we move forward with this. Has the Coastal Commission been contacted, and or have they been brought along on this project, just out of curiosity?
Yes, they have.
Okay. And so far, so good. They're
yes. We routinely keep in touch with the Coastal Commission on all the projects, and this is one we brought up a couple of times. Didn't get any comments or any particular questions. They see it as rather small. We did recently lose our assigned coastal planner for the city of Morro Bay, so the particular staff person that I had such a great relationship with is now no longer with the commission, but his supervisor is now our assigned person for the time being, and he's also familiar with the workload of Morro Bay.
Okay, thank you. And could you give me a little bit of history about why we would waive the parking in lieu fees?
Sure. So council in 2016 waived.
Adopted the resolution.
I'm going to maybe let Scott take this one on.
Yeah, the council adopted a resolution that. So at the time, our parking and lieu fees were $15,000 a space, and I made a recommendation to council to alter those, actually to waive them for a period of time, to as an economic development tool while we were going through the update of our general plan and local coastal program. The council did do that. They did add back in a fee. So for the first four, you get them for free. After that, you pay $500 space. That continues. When does the resolution expire, do you recall? It expires next summer. And so by then, the idea would be that we have other programs and policies in place to address parking.
Okay. And this was before my time on the council, so forgive me for asking. So this applies to people that are remodeling as well as new business. My understanding was originally you were waiving it to attract new business, or is that incorrect?
It applies to anybody doing commercial development. So that's what it was predominantly applied to. To date, we haven't issued any in lieu spaces yet. We have some teed up. This is one of them. Okay. But we've not officially approved any to this point.
All right. Those are all my questions.
Okay, thanks. I want to reserve any of my questions and just get into comments following this, and then I'll invite the applicant agent up. And Dana, maybe 10 minutes or so? Yeah, okay, that'd be good. And then just from a course of ex parte, I did speak with Stan Van Beerden as ex parte today, and the applicant, but I just wanted to get that out. Kathy, welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Irons and council members. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here tonight representing the applicant for the 945 Embarcadero project, also known as the House of Juju. Before I begin, I'd like to thank staff and the Planning Commission for their time and assistance with this project and their recommendation for approval. This project is relatively simple, and staff has provided a detailed overview, so I will be brief in my comments and just go over a few items. The major components of this project are to remodel the interior portion of the existing building to create additional restaurant seating, a bar, to relocate the trash bins with a new exterior enclosure, enhance the existing sidewalk, public improvements to Anchor Park, and to repair 5 pilings in the existing seawall. From the onset of the building, from the onset of obtaining this lease site, it has been contemplated to remodel the rear of the building for additional dining space. Since the site is very small and built out, there wasn't much available to this tenant in the way of major improvements, so the proposed project incorporates new amenities and other public benefits to the city-owned park and adjacent area to offset the capital improvements necessary for a long-term lease. Before submitting the plans for consideration to the city, we had several meetings with the City Recreation and Parks Department to see what type of public improvements that they would like to have in the park area. By way of background information, these discussions were done prior to the city removing the grass and installing the artificial turf in the park. While this does not change the proposal, I just wanted you to be aware of this. The city park improvements, as proposed, will remove the narrow sidewalk and replace it with a diagonal walkway from the Embarcadero to the Harbor Walk. This new location will also provide a maximum usage in the park area and provide new space for the construction of 2 new benches, bicycle racks, and the succulent garden area. The new design will also provide a more open feeling and space to the intersection of the Harbor Walk from the north to the south. In looking at the site, the applicant wanted to improve the existing Harbor Walk and the pedestrian areas, so therefore he is proposing a new trash enclosure and a triangle extension of the Harbor Walk. This will create a better access to the bayside and new public seating area where the trash containers are located now. I would like to note that the project, as proposed, has purposely designed so that the triangular section of the Harbor Walk is over the existing rock riprap to avoid impacts to eelgrass located in the close proximity at the end of the wharf and the habitat along the north side of the wharf. Last, the site has undergone a wharf and piling inspection in January 2017. The report identified piling and revetment repair, so the project was revised to incorporate this repair work identified in the structural plans. I'll deviate for just a minute. Maybe, John, I can answer your questions on that. There are the engineer's plans attached to this plan set that you have tonight. Basically, the short answer to the question on the seawall is that he's proposing a concrete batter wall that would be anchored to the existing seawall, and he also recommends periodic inspections of the seawall and continue. And I believe that the city has asked all the lease sites to have periodic inspections of their seawalls and that to report to the city, and they require those reports to get turned in. But further details from the engineer will be included at the time of building permit. That concludes my comments on the project description. However, I would like to take a moment to discuss one condition of approval, that is Planning Commission number 14. This condition is in regards to the ramp that connects the adjacent lee site with this lee site. The Planning Commission's objective was to remove the ramp that is a transition between the two lee sites. However, that's not the easiest task. Before I get into that, I think it is important to give you a little background information. The neighboring lee site constructed the new Harbor Walk and then connected to this existing wharf. When the project was constructed, there was an approximate 2-inch elevation difference between the existing and the new walkway, so the ramp was built to make up the discrepancy. This was done so that it met ADA slope requirements as well. I would add, at the time, the city did not have any issues with the ramp and signed off with a final inspection and a certificate of occupancy for the new project with no changes to the ramp. The problem we have today is here that it is not an easy way to modify the area without with the elevation change. The staff report suggests that the harbor walk decking be raised to match the elevation and provide a smooth transition to the lee site to the south without the need for a ramp or additional transition material. If the applicant were to raise the deck boards in the transition area only, you would still have a ramp. The new ramp would simply be the same as what you have now because a tapered edge is necessary to feather in the slope for the elevation change. In addition, there would be a trip hazard on the sides of the new raised deck or ramp along with a greater concern of the same type of materials that would camouflage this area and would not be as noticeable with a difference of material that creates a more conspicuous change. The other way is a little bit more complex in that the deck boards would need to be completely removed approximately 6 feet from the south to the north to replace this connection, but the building edge on the from the building edge to the wharf edge on the water side. So there will still be a slope in this particular area when it's done. One additional consequence of modifying the deck boards along the building edge I would like to note is that the building straddles the deck boards, and this could lead to drainage issues for the existing building. In conclusion, I would simply ask that this applicant not be burdened with constructing a new transition since he did not install the ramp or because his project does not propose any modifications to the existing wharf. Creating additional difficulties for this applicant is not a fair and equitable solution. Had this project proposed a new wharf and a walkway, then it would be appropriate to condition the project to meet the elevation of the other walkway. The city has always made it incumbent on a new project to meet the existing elevation conditions and not the other way around. So on behalf of Mr. Van Buren, I would like to respectfully request the council's approval of this project tonight as presented with the deletion of condition number 14 as we have requested. This concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you for your time.
Okay, great, Kathy. If you want to just stay there, I think we have some questions.
Okay.
And just real quickly, as I was out there today, you know, some of the beams that are visible where the corner decking will go in, you know, they're probably in need of paint and there's rust and stuff like that. So is that part of the project as
yes.
far as going through those beams and coating those? And is that part of it as well?
Yes. Mike Smith, the structural engineer, identified that as, you know, needing a little bit of repairs. And so he's talked to the applicant about that, and they'll propose a fix for that.
Those are the only questions I have. Anybody else for questions to my right? No? Anybody to the left? No?
Well, yeah.
Go ahead, John.
Kathy, hi. Thanks. Was there any economic analysis done in terms of the improvement of the business and increased revenues and what those increased revenues for the city may well be?
I'm not aware of it. That would be something that the applicant could answer, and I could invite him up to answer that question if he's
sure.
done. Stan?
What was the question again? I'm sorry.
Given the fact that you're going to have more square footage mm-hmm. for your tenant, hopefully the business income will improve over time. I'm wondering if there's any pro formas that have been done to indicate what percent increase in net income there might be and how that translates in income to the city.
No, there hasn't been because, I mean, it's an extension of 250 square feet, but it's going to be an amazing extension for the restaurant. House of Juju has consistently have increased sales in almost 3 years they've been in business there right now. If they got that extra 200 square feet with that visibility to the bay right there, I'm only going to guess, you know, it's going to go up pretty exponentially for them because they can't keep their, you know, the seats are filled and the line waiting for them right now. By adding those extra seats, you know, I mean, just since we've taken over the project, it went from, you know, it's been a few years, but we went from income to the city of about $12,000 to I think 25 to 30,000 right now with the current tenant. So if he, you know, increased to 25%, you know, you could have another $5,000-$10,000 a year out of that business for income.
Good enough. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Stan.
Any other questions?
Anything else? Seeing none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that'll conclude the public comment. We don't have any speakers for that. We'll get into discussion and I was just gonna start off with a little bit of the discussion. In regards to the project and had a conversation with Stan and as far as the applicant and some of the public improvements. So, you know, historically, when we looked at this site as a council several years ago, it was identified that it was a challenging site and that it was small, just as the presentation identified. small, not a lot of room for improvements. All that's in the staff report, recognizing that there was some direction to, okay, to ensure that, you know, there's a equitable and return on the investment, and for the term of the lease, looking at doing some public improvements, which led to the park area as well. Part of the conversation I had today, and just was, you know, just want to confirm that this would still be receptible, but looking at the lease site itself and the improvements that were added to the project from the park, my feeling was that we would remove the park improvements and just work towards the actual Harper walk improvements, and I'll talk through my reasoning on that. Understand that there's, you know, the neighboring project that's been identified, that there's two different elevations involved. The Smith Held project neighboring that came in with a new Harper walk and decking material. The level's not right. There's a ramp that was installed. This project is proposing adding that little corner section in. So my conversation for council, and I just want to make sure that the applicant's receptive to that as well, is just concentrate on the Harper walk. In other words, we ensure that the Harbor Walk material, the decking material, is all contiguous, because right now, as proposed, there would still be the timbers that were there, and there's still the transition issue that was discussed by Kathy in this. So as with, you know, enhancing the Harbor Walk, I guess, and I appreciate the Planning Commission's work and the applicant's work getting to this point, but looking at the project that's presented to us, and I guess that's part of the purview of council. You know, the Planning Commission was looking at it as proposed. From a council standpoint, we've looked at various lease sites and the challenges and the investment that goes along with that. And so my proposal, and I'll just confirm with the applicant as well, is that if we're able to just concentrate on the Harbor Walk portion of that, because right now, as I understand the project, Scott, and I'll just, and Cindy, just confirm with me, the timbers themselves that are part of the hard walk are not part of being replaced or anything. And so the idea would be that we complete the project. In other words, that harbor walk would, decking can be replaced with the newer material that's being used on all the projects, and that rear section would be upgraded to that. The elevations would match. And then the proposal of the park improvements, we would, lack of a better word, forgive that part of the proposal. And I would contend, and John, I was glad to have the discussion on the community impact fees, because I had, you know, similar conversations with Scott as well. In a lot of the projects that, not a lot, but all of the projects on the waterfront, as the improvements are worked through, we will request and require our applicants to improve the sidewalks and the widths of those as the projects are developed. And I feel it's incumbent upon the city to do the same thing. So I would contend that the city should take on the sidewalk improvements on the Anchor Park and increase those to 8 feet, both on the waterfront and the land side. And that, you know, if there's any of the lateral access, that would be part of our community impact fees. That's part of our development fees to be able to enhance that. And I think the city should be responsible for doing that. So that's my proposal in this, is to not have the park improvements, but shift away from the lateral access park improvements that's as proposed, and forgive that portion of it, but make sure that the harbor walk, both the decking and the material, are upgraded to be contiguous with all the new material that is being utilized. That may be long-winded, but that was kind of the direction that I was going, and basically there would be kind of an offset in cost to the applicant in not doing the park improvements, but then could be reinvested in the harbor walk access and public access in the back. Hopefully be kind of a wash in investment. It's a narrow, tiny lease site, and I think we have to be cognizant of how we do that. So those are my comments, and be willing for conversations from council. And if there's any objections to some of my comments from the applicant, I would be willing to have those discussions as well. But that's where I thought I'd open up the discussion. And with that, maybe I'll turn to my right, and maybe Marlis or John, you can start off as well.
Well, thank you for that, Mayor. I absolutely agree. I understand that we do have the park fund, and I would much rather personally see the harbor walk improvements made as opposed to the park improvements. Not that they're not both important and or necessary, but if I had to prioritize one over the other, I would opt for improving the harbor walk. I think that the applicant and their tenant has done a great job in a very difficult site. And the reason I asked the question about revenues was I'm glad you mentioned it, because if you didn't, I was going to mention that the revenues have improved markedly, and that this project allows them to not only improve for the business that's there and the business community, but also for the city, which benefits from that as well. And so given that, the other issue that I was concerned about, because of other problems that we've had along with other leases, is that issue with the seawall and making sure that that is viable and stable, and that any changes that are made are going to, I wouldn't use the word guarantee, but pretty much guarantee us that that's going to remain stable for the longest period of time possible. And that we not see a seawall failure there. And so, thusly, my concern for that, and it sounds like that's being addressed. Thank you, Kathy, for your comments on that. And I'll look forward to the complete turn myself off. Maybe that was timed. A complete report when that comes out in terms of what's going to happen. And so I'll just say I absolutely support that. I don't know how the applicant feels about that, but I would support that direction. And then at the appropriate time, come budget, if this park becomes one that we want to improve, we have impact funds that are available through our community development fees that could be utilized for that. So I'll stop there.
Marlis?
I also agree. I think it's really important that as these lease sites come available or come up for lease, that we make sure that the harbor walk is completed and is done according to the standards that we've already set. So I would really support that. The only question I guess I would have would be of staff, if they are concurring with this kind of a recommendation, and also the applicant, if it is really a fair exchange, which I honestly don't know. And the other point I might just raise, how that harbor walk, if it's changed, affects the park and what it does to the park. And I'm not sure. I would need to fully understand that. I know that we were going to talk. The plan was to change, put the harbor walk on part of where the park is, and I don't know where that leaves the park if we don't have improvements.
I think the harbor walk, that little angle piece,
right,
is still part of the project.
Is still part of the project.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And does that leave the park in approximately the same kind of condition as currently in? So there just would not be the benches and the garden and that's the exchange?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood.
Okay.
So I'm anxious to hear what the applicant has to say.
Okay. Matt?
Eric, I have a question for you. In terms of the life term of the lease, with these in terms of time left on the lease, and would these improvements extend that by how much time?
It's largely going to depend on the ultimate cost of the improvements and how this fleshes out, depending on whether we go harbor walk versus park. Being a very small lease site, it wouldn't be expected to possibly generate the same kind of expense as a smaller or a larger site, because there's just not room to do it. But those terms would be up to negotiation. I think transferring one for the other, I think that's going to be largely up to the applicant because the scope, that could change pretty significantly.
So it depends on the scope and the monetary scope of the project that will extend the lease.
Yeah, and the overall improvements. The lease right now, the original lease was a 3.5-year lease. There was an aim to just get through the initial permitting for that small remodel. And then in 2010, a 7-year extension was put on it. So it's really a 10-year lease. It's not quite our standard lease template. It's close because it was originally envisioned as a short-term lease, so it wasn't as big and robust a lease as our normal ones are. So I'd probably say that at the conclusion of this, wherever we end up going with it, when we go to negotiate a new lease, we'll put our standard lease in place. And so it would be up to a potential 50-year term on it at that point with a whole new lease.
Got it. And then in terms of my likes and dislikes, I also appreciate the improvements to Anchor Park, even with that diagonal walk through there. I think that'll be useful as that to enhance in terms of the drainage issues on the existing structure. I like the way that they were talking about improving that, and then improvements to Anchor Park. I also would like to see, Jamie, I totally agree, and actually I think we're all in agreement, in terms of making a smooth transition with the Harbor Walk and making it look uniform. I would also want to make sure that we can put into the terms of the lease when we go into negotiations in terms of the maintenance and the upkeep of that triangle section that would extend out over the rocks on city property. John, I also agree with you in terms of the seawall, considering what we've gone through in the last year and a half. I would like to, as we go ahead with the structural engineer, looking at the seawall, seeing what could or necessarily needs to be done, and just make sure that we do it right on the first try. Also, and then the last one was, Eric, I'd like to see, in terms of the master lease, any sort of improvements as we put into them, if we go ahead with this project, making sure that these improvements are somehow put into the master lease going forward, that it would be the responsibility of the lessee to take care of them. That's it.
Okay. Red?
Yes, I agree with my colleagues on the Harbor Walk, and I'd like to hear back also from staff and the applicant. I am concerned about the drainage problem with that small sidewalk, and I'd like to see that addressed. And I hate to lose the park improvements by the city taking it over and putting it into a capital plan and a budget. So, but I don't know how else to do it. So
yeah. So I guess we could invite the applicant and ask them, what they're receptive on that. And so having a little bit of that conversation, kind of leading this conversation. A lot of it has to do with, the time and experience that we've had with other lease sites and the commitment that the city has to complete the Harbor Walks on all of our projects to make sure that the Harbor Walk is uniform and contiguous. Because it's a smaller lease site, I would contend that there really is limitations on how much investment can be made. So when we were looking kind of at the suggesting the park improvements, which I agree with you, that was a way to put in public improvements. Sorry, Kathy, with to put public improvements with, to allow, a longer term lease. But after reviewing the project, in my view, I was thinking, I felt I wanted to have the discussion with council to make sure that we did the Harbor Walk portion of it. Grant, considering if council wanted to move that direction. And I think the other part of that is our community development impact fees. I think we've got a responsibility to do that as well. We collect them, and I think, we ask our tenants and others to put in sidewalks that are of proper width. That particular park has 5-foot sidewalks, and I think, we should, as a city, should take our community development impact fees and make those improvements. Just, I think that's a responsible way as well. So those were my comments, and I just want to hear, maybe Kathy can respond whether or not that's all doable. Thanks.
Thank you. Kathy Novak again. The applicant is certainly happy to entertain this idea. We do have a couple problems that I just wanted to bring up to the council tonight, and since this is just came up tonight, and we haven't had much chance to take a look at it. First thing, maybe we could just request a continuance on the hearing till maybe the first one in November to give us an opportunity to look at things. But the three things that I really want to bring out is if we raise that harbor walk up behind the building, we do have a couple issues that we need to look at. One is that the building straddles the deck boards right now. So if we raise the harbor walk up any, we need to make sure that we can address any potential drainage issues from the harbor walk connection to the building being raised above the existing level. The other one is that we have a door that's going out the rear of the building that's going now onto the harbor walk. And if we raise that up a couple of inches, then we have an issue where we might be stepping down into the building to enter the building, so we need to make sure that we don't have any access issues, so we don't have any cause any problems there. And then following on down is where we're making the connection between the existing Anchor Park sidewalk, the triangle section, and the new harbor walk going in. Make sure that we don't create ourselves any elevation problems that we get in there, because what we're trying to avoid is doing any kind of ramp transitions or something like that. So we just need a little bit of time to have the architect, maybe a contractor, come down and take a look at these items specifically and make sure that we're not going to create a problem. We do have quite a bit of length there, so it's very possible that we could start at the Anchor Park and kind of slope upward toward the Smith Held property and gain that 2-inch elevation over a longer period of time, that where you'd have a slight incline but not maybe something that's really noticeable. Mm-hmm. And maybe tomorrow, so just a comment on the triangle section. So what the triangle section is going westward of the existing railing that's there at Anchor Park and the existing railing on the wharf now and filling in that section, so there wouldn't be any changes in the actual park area by just putting that triangle section in there. So hopefully that will answer the question. So respectfully, if you wouldn't mind letting us have a little time to address these issues and make sure that we haven't created a problem for ourselves, that would be great.
I think it would be prudent for us to continue it, and thanks for being receptive to explore what that would look like. So we could just go ahead and make a motion to continue it based on the direction conversations that we have currently, and that we can schedule that, come back. You said November?
The first meeting in November. I don't believe that you'll have a second meeting in November because of the Thanksgiving holidays.
So we'll look for the first meeting in November, and if there's any adjustments beyond that, we would be in contact with you. So tentatively, we can go to a date certain.
Right, and we'll start looking at it, right away, so that we can, and we'll talk to staff and the Harbor Department too, and keep them posted on what we found out, and we can try to address issues. Thank you.
All right, with that, do we need a motion?
Yes, you need a motion for a couple of reasons. First, and a couple of questions I have. First, do you want to continue the public hearing? Or do you want to close the public hearing on this and then analyze it without a public hearing? And I'm assuming you're going to continue to a date certain. So if you are, we don't need to republish any public hearing notices. So
correct. If we notice it to a date certain, then we wouldn't have another public hearing.
If you want to have the public hearing continued, then you wouldn't close this public hearing. You would just continue this public hearing to the November meeting.
Okay.
You have the option of, since you have the public hearing, closing the public hearing and then just having discussion. It's up to you whether then it's just placement on the agenda, whether it's going to be public hearing or not.
Okay. So I think the simple form would be to just continue it and keep the public hearing going.
Okay.
Okay.
And the date of that meeting is November the 14th.
November 14th.
So you ready for a motion?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure, I would move that we continue item B1 until date certain November 14th meeting, at which time further consideration will be given to the comments we have made.
Second.
So I didn't quite hear the motion. Sorry, your mic clicked.
I know it did. Stop touching anything. I just move item B1 be continued to date certain November the 14th, at which time we will reconsider the input that will come back to us based upon the discussion that was had tonight.
Second.
So we have motion, Mr. Heading. Second, Ms. McPherson. Any further discussion? Seeing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Thanks, you guys. Thanks for working with us on that. All right, that concludes item B1, and we can move on to item C1. Great. And this is real excited about this. So item C1 is review and approval of the employment contract with Scott Collins to serve as a city manager for the city of Morro Bay. And I'll look to Mr. Lamelli to open this item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to start by talking a little bit about the recruitment process, then talk about Mr. Collins specifically, and then talk about the contract at the end. First of all, the recruitment process began June 30th and closed August 28th. We received over 50 applicants from mostly California, but also from the Western United States. In early September, the council screened applicants and selected finalists to be interviewed. The interview process occurred on September 28th, consisted of two panels, a community panel with five residents and two local city managers, and the city council panel. It became obvious to both panels that Mr. Scott Collins had the skills, knowledge, and experience to become our next city manager. He understands the culture of our community, the importance of tourism to our economy, and active civic engagement of our citizens. He also met with department heads that day, or the next day, actually on Friday, and had input from the chamber as well. Background information on Mr. Collins. He served as a congressional intern, research assistant for the International City County Management Association, budget policy analyst for Jefferson County in Golden, Colorado, senior management analyst for the city and county of Denver, assistant to the city manager for city of Boulder, Colorado, and then became assistant city manager and then deputy city manager of the city of Santa Cruz since 2011. In his current position, he oversees a budget of $82 million and 330 full-time employees. He oversees implementation of the City Council's strategic plan, conducts complex policy, budget, and program analysis for the City Council and staff, and leads the City's communication team. He has a Master's of Public Administration from George Washington University, with an emphasis in state and local government. And after our interviews earlier this month, to relieve his stress, he went surfing. He has grown up in San Diego and lived primarily on the coast pretty much except for his time back east and in Colorado. And he and his family plan to relocate to Morro Bay sometime next month, or actually the month of December. And the contract, I'll talk to that now. The contract provides a starting salary of $176,000 and a commencement date of November 6th. The contract was prepared by your city attorney following the direction given of the city council in closed session, the parameters outlined thereof.
Thanks, Marty. And with that, so we can go into council questions, public comment, which we have one public speaker comment, and then we can get into council comments, approve the contract, and then invite Scott up for a few comments at that time, and then we'll have a short recess. So council questions. Marlon, any questions?
No.
John, no questions? We have one speaker slip at this time, so Erica Crawford, if you want to come up.
Thank you. Mayor, City Council, and City Staff, my name is Erica Crawford. I'm with the Morro Bay Chamber. I'm here just to talk a little bit about the way that the city involved our organization in the process of selecting Scott Collins as the city's new city manager. The chamber was contacted by your staff to ask for our availability to meet Mr. Collins once he had been selected by the interview panel, but before he was officially offered the position. Two of our board directors and I were able to meet Mr. Collins with Mr. Lamelli last week, week before, to ensure that his experience and approach with businesses would be a good fit for our members. We were very pleased with Mr. Collins' description of his relationship-building efforts with the private sector in Santa Cruz, and we expressed as much in an email to Mr. Lamelli after our meeting. Thank you for continuing to recognize the importance of having the business voice at the table. Our chamber, which is composed of 285 businesses and represents over 2,500 volunteers and employees in the city, looks forward to working with Mr. Collins and to moving ahead with the recently adopted Downtown Waterfront Strategic Plan and Economic Development Roadmap. We do wish Mr. Collins a smooth transition into our community, and we are readily available to set up meetings with business community leaders in Morro Bay to assist with his orientation. And as it happens, we just planned a mixer for November 6th, his first day. So maybe you could come to that. It's going to be at Buttercup Bakery. Thank you.
Thanks, Erica. You're great. With that, I don't have any more speaker slips for public comment on this item. Looking to the end. Okay, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to council for council comments. And start to the left. Brett, any comments?
No, I'm just tickled to have such a great applicant.
All right, great.
Who wants to move here and who wants to live in Morro Bay. I really appreciate that.
All right, great. Red, Matt?
In terms of comments, I'd like to welcome Mr. Collins and thank him. It became very obvious during the interview process, kind of in asking questions and then watching everybody around me ask questions. His command of the situation and just his experience is refreshing, and I can't wait till he starts.
Thanks. John?
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Lomeli, for your service and your time. You stepped in at a very important time, and you provided stability, a great sense of humor, great guidance, and since we couldn't convince you to stay, we did go ahead with the process, and I'm happy that we did because we found somebody better than you. No.
I would agree.
So with all seriousness, Marty, thank you so much for your service. We do appreciate that and look forward to your remaining few weeks here with us. And Marty's not going anywhere because he lives in Morro Bay, which is a great thing. Second, I was impressed with Ralph Anderson and Associates. Thought that they did a good job. I will say that one of the comments that I heard from one of the panelists on the negative side was that the applicant pool may not have been as deep as it could have been, but we found a jewel, and so that's the important thing. I want to thank the community team and also the two city managers that were involved as part of the process as well, that vetted Mr. Collins, and also their unanimous recommendations was to hire Scott as well. I want to read an email that today from Dan Carl, addressed to Mayor Irons and myself as vice mayor. And Dan Carl is the district director for the California Coastal Commission. And he says this: I saw the newspaper article this past weekend regarding Scott Collins being hired by the city, and just wanted to say congratulations to all of you. We, the Coastal Commission staff, have worked with Scott for many years and have always found him to be the consummate professional who we can count on to deal with issues in a professional and problem-solving way. So to the city and the current incoming mayors, I just wanted to let you know you made a good choice and have selected someone with integrity and passion for the community who should only make Morro Bay an even better place. And to you, Scott, in case you haven't received a copy of this yet, he's wishing you all the best in the new position and looking forward to continuing to work with you in your new capacity. And then he states, as both Jamie and John know, there are a myriad of coastal issues moving along in the city, including a significant LCP update, and we welcome your bringing your talents to the table. So again, congratulations to you all and to the city. And I think that just says it all from a professional out there that's obviously very important to the city, who acknowledges that our choice is the right choice. And so I look forward to working with Scott. I look forward to you, community, getting to meet who I consider to be a consummate professional, a very affable, capable, and now, fortunately, city manager of Morro Bay in a minute.
Thanks, John. Marlis?
That's great, John. Well, I want to echo the comments that you made about Mr. Lomeli. It has been such a pleasure to work with him, and we were just delighted to have him help us out through this transition period and do such a good job of recruiting such a fine person to take over in his place. I couldn't be more delighted to welcome Scott to Morro Bay. He was the clear choice of absolutely everybody who participated in the interview process, and I just know he's going to do a fabulous job here in Morro Bay, and we only hope that he stays and works with us through all of the difficult issues that we're working with, and we know he's going to be working with the Coastal Commission, so, and we know he's going to do a good job. I just have one regret, and that is that I won't be here on November 6th to welcome him, but as soon as I get back, I will do that. So welcome. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, everyone. And I would echo everyone's remarks and add just a couple. Marty, thanks. During the interview process, I looked over Marty as we were interviewing all the applicants, but in particular with Scott. And Marty was sitting much like he is now, kind of like a proud dad, thinking, you know what, this is going to be great. And I just appreciate the process that we went through, the interview process. I'm delighted to welcome Scott and your family and your dad, Bob, that's here tonight, and stepmom, Jolynn. Welcome. Your son is in good hands. We're going to be looking after him. We're very, very excited. And Marty, thanks. I know you're retiring from the profession and then coming in as an interim. You've served your career as a city manager, and it's an honorable profession. All of the staff that are serve in the professional capacity you do. So just want to say thanks to all the staff that have been involved in this and working through the transition that we have. And that's all I have to say. So thanks very much. And with that, I would make a motion that we approve item C1, the contract for Scott Collins as a Moorbase city manager.
Second.
We have a motion, and a motion by Mayor Iyer, second by Councilmember Heading. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. Scott, would you mind coming up and sharing a few words for us?
Well, no pressure, right? Yeah. Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'm so delighted and excited to be here tonight. This is a big moment in my life. And when I was driving down here from Santa Cruz today, I had quite a bit of time to reflect on kind of my career and my life. And what it came back to is just I didn't get here by myself. I got here because of the people who helped shape my values, principles, and skills. It's my friends, it's the coaches, it's the teachers, it's the bosses, it's the city managers, it's the city councils and mayors that I've worked for, who all helped instill in me this very important sense of giving back to the community in public service and making the community a better place to live, work, and play. And I'm so thankful for that. And most importantly, I'm thankful for my family, the fact that my dad and stepmom could come up from San Diego today to help share this moment with me. They've sacrificed quite heavily for me and my siblings and seen us all succeed in our careers, so it's a great moment to share with them tonight. And my wife and two young children are very excited to come to Morro Bay and be part of this great community. I will say that my kids are more excited about having their own rooms, but they will come to love Morro Bay, and they love The Rock. I'll just put that out there. Now for the community, I think it's really important that you all understand, those who are here tonight, those who are watching at home, and those who may read about this tomorrow, we are here to serve you, the community. And I will have an open door policy for what I hope is a very long tenure here with the city as a city manager. So I encourage all community members to reach out to me to share their concerns, their thoughts, and ideas. We can make a great community together. To the city staff that are here tonight and those who will hear about this tomorrow, I'm honored that I get to work with all of you, get to work alongside all of you. I've heard great things from department heads, from council, from Marty, and from community members, just how dedicated you all are to public service, and I just can't wait to get to work with you. And then finally, to the mayor and council, we had an extraordinary conversation during the interview process, and I look forward to continuing that discussion for a long time. I just want you to know that I will honor your dedication and sacrifice to this community by working very hard to help you and support you in achieving your shared goals. So I can't wait to get started on November 6th, and thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Scott. Welcome. Right on. So it's a great time to take a short recess, and then we'll come back after the recess. Thanks very much. All right, welcome back, everyone. Moving on to our next item on the agenda, item C2 is the Water Reclamation Facility Project Update. And we're going to get started off on that. We've got a little bit of a discussion to go. And Rob, if you're going to lead us off on the staff report on this item, we'll get started. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor, City Council members. I'm Rob Leivick, Public Works Director, here to present. Bring back to you, based on your direction last meeting, a little update on our tiny little project that we're going to do out on South Bay Boulevard. Our recommendations are to consider the staff report that you have of the Water Reclamation Facility Program, specifically related to your direction on September 26th. Consider both the traditional implementation schedule and the accelerated schedule. Staff is we're asking you to direct us to follow the accelerated schedule, to modify the Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee schedule to meet on an as-needed basis, and or provide any other direction that you deem appropriate. At your September 26th meeting, the council directed for us to proceed forward with the planning and permitting of the water reclamation facility at the South Bay Boulevard site, to bring back a project timeline, which is part of the agenda package, within 2 weeks. In consultation with financial experts, examine our 2015 rate study and look at how much funds could be made available for the WRF project from that rate analysis. Bring back a discussion of the program management structure and process, including assessment of available resources within the Public Works Department in 30 days, and to revisit the WRF project goals to ensure accuracy before going out to bid. Little update on planning and permitting at South Bay. We've directed ESA to resume preparation of the EIR, including revising the project description for the notice of preparation. Those refinements include some reductions in odor control facilities, the elimination of the general fund portions of the corp yard. That being said, the project, as envisioned, does include facilities for our water and wastewater facilities at that project site. A little bit on the project timeline. The EIR certification and financing are the critical path. So those are items that need to be completed by date certain for this project to move forward without any delays. The two implementation alternatives differ only in the procurement schedule for the design build of the water reclamation facility, in so much as the accelerated schedule that we're recommending gets us to a guaranteed maximum price that can feed into the future rate analysis sooner than the traditional method. The EIR certification and financing will not be affected by either schedule chosen, and
just need to point out that neither of those alternatives result in an earlier delivery of the project. Here's the requisite chart of any PowerPoint presentation that's difficult to read on the overhead. So I've summarized some key council action dates. October 24th, review and approval of the RFQ or request for qualifications and confirmation of the project goals. November 14th, award of lift station and force main design contract. December 12th, review of existing rate assumptions and determine if a larger project could be funded with the existing revenues. Excuse me. And also on December 12th, review the program management structure. Regarding WRFCAC, the council formed WRFCAC in 2014 to provide recommendations on the major project decisions for this essential project. They've been valuable in selecting consultants, development of the master plans, and site alternative evaluation. They've also been instrumental in providing selection of the preferred site. Our staff recommendation is to schedule WRFCAC meetings at critical review points in the EIR and other technical processes. For example, when we're into the design of the lift station and force main, there are still some design alternatives for that force main alignment that we will want technical input from our WRFCAC and to get their input at that point. Just want to also point out there's additional WRF project inputs into the process, council direction. The City Council subcommittee is still regularly involved in the project. And then also we would continue to include the regular projects updates in our Public Works Advisory Board meeting director's report. That concludes my brief staff report, and happy to answer any questions.
All right, great. So we'll go. We've got a couple speakers left, so we'll go into council questions, open up for public comment, and then come back for discussion. And I'll look to my left. Red, do you want to start us off on questions?
Yeah, a couple of questions that Rob and I have actually discussed before, but I want to bring them out into the public arena. The office building, the water staff office at the South Bay site, is it really necessary to build it there? Can we continue to use the existing office that's on Atascadero Road? And can we build something smaller at South Bay just to house the staff that will actually be running the plant there?
Of course. It's probably not the optimal way to organize our staff, but we could have split that staff up and have the folks that are operating plant on a day-to-day basis out at that facility and the folks that would be in that. We have a combined collections wastewater treatment staff now that would be working the collections at a separate facility, and they would trade out. Our water and wastewater staffs work very closely together. We will have our water staff that will be actually running once that water goes through the magical process of treatment and becomes reclaimed water. They will be operating the reclaimed water portion under their water licenses. So they will need close contact. Yes, it is possible to split the staff, but I would not recommend it to have the staff so that they work closely together at one facility. They would respond better to emergency needs, having them at one location rather than splitting their staff and the equipment up.
Okay. We've heard a lot of community dissatisfaction with Michael Nunley Associates, Can we do a better job and save money if we just hire a single project manager? And what would we gain and what would we lose?
Sure. We're going to talk in detail about this on December 12th, but maybe give you a brief overview of this item. I don't believe that it can be done by one person solely. There are many times that multiple people are needed to prepare documents, drawings. There needs to be resources available to the project manager so that they can prepare reports, edit. So it's really not a one-person job. It's a team effort. I believe there are different ways to structure the program management, but I don't believe that it's a single person job. It's a team effort.
And the resources that you said that we need, additional resources from time to time, those
they don't exist in our department.
Okay. All right. I know that a couple of us on the council are examining the Bartle Wells draft rate study, and we're going to get an updated study in January?
December.
Okay. These studies tend to make conservative estimates and assumptions that drive up the projected rates well above what we think the actual cost will be. How much latitude do we have to challenge those assumptions to try to make the numbers more real world?
We request professional studies for a reason. These professionals have experience in with other cities in putting rates together. From my experience, rate studies are typically conservative. Mm-hmm. They recommend a higher rate than needs to be implemented. In fact, the law requires the council to only implement the rate needed to run the utility and have adequate reserves. That statement probably doesn't satisfy a lot of people in the audience or watching on TV, because they don't believe that government will actually do that. But it's something that we should be bringing back to council on a regular basis to review these rates to make sure that the rates are right size for the community. We will be able to scrub those rates as much as possible. I would not recommend to come in with the bare minimum unless we are ready to take on a second rate analysis should the project cost more than we have rates to cover.
Okay. Are we buying more land at South Bay than we actually need for the plant? And could we save money and preserve agricultural land if we buy only what we need for the plant and for access to the plant?
Yes, we are buying more land than needed for the plant. I think we're talking approximately 27-ish acres for the purchase, and the plant will occupy approximately 5 acres of land area. The property owner does not desire to create a lollipop-shaped lot that makes portions of his lot not usable. So he has requested that we purchase a corner of the property rather than to carve out a stem that would be the access road and a site that would be the wharf site, but to actually square that off and to create a corner out of it. Council will have the ability to preserve that land, and it cannot be used for residential development without a vote of the people or commercial purposes. It will be used for probably open space on the site. The perhaps solar to offset energy costs. Another thought that popped in my head, but the cost of the land is, when compared to the entire overall project, is relatively small, approximately $10,000 an acre. So $300,000 for the property is what we're talking about. At this point in time, we're estimating about $150 million project. So that's a fairly small percentage of the overall project cost. Not insignificant, but it is a rather small. And that amount, should we not have amicable relationships with the proposed seller, could be eaten up in legal costs should we need to go to court over buying a smaller parcel.
Okay. And you mentioned, I don't remember what, there was, I have heard community concern that we may be planning to annex the Tri-W property along with a plant in order to build a new housing development. And this is probably a question for Scott.
Yeah, let Scott answer this.
But let me say, I have never heard anyone in city government, council, or staff mention anything about building additional houses out there. But Scott, what would have to happen for any new housing development to occur on that Tri-W property?
On the larger Tri-W site that the portion of the wastewater treatment plant would sit on, right, there's it all resides in the county. And so the only way we could bring in land for development purposes for the purposes of housing would be through a vote of the people. We're subject to Measure F, which requires any annexation for commercial or residential development to be brought in, you know, through a vote of the people. Without that, you can't do it. So we have the exception in there where we can annex property for public facilities purposes, wastewater treatment plant. We can do it for that, but we can't do it for housing. So if there was ever any idea about something like that happening out there, that would be subject to a vote. So it's pretty straightforward.
Okay, so to be clear, there is no development unless the people of Morro Bay vote for it.
To come into the city, yes, on that property, absolutely.
Okay. That's all my questions.
Great. Red, Matt?
Rob, I do have a question about the WharfCAC dates in terms of looking forward, in terms of the calendar that you've provided and what's to do. I know that a number of people are thinking that the WharfCAC has been dismissed or discounted, not being used properly. So are those calendar dates set into the process and we can see when they're going to be happening?
We have not carved them out in stone yet for the WRFCAC items. I would recommend, as far as WRFCAC, that we continue to have them kind of hold on their schedule that first Tuesday of the month for meetings, because it's very difficult to herd the cats into the room if you leave it open for an have a tentative schedule for the WRFCAC items and call them when we have an action item or a discussion item for them to work on. The reason WRFCAC becomes canceled is when there is no action item for them to talk about, when it's coming directly back to council based on council direction. That's the reason we have canceled WRFCAC items.
All right. And also back to your comment about price for South Bay site and also for the Rigetti site. When you speak about $10,000 per acre, is that roughly equitable to what the Rigetti site would be?
I think that's where I got that number from, was looking at the Rigetti site at $2.5 million for the 250,000 acres. 250 acres. 250,000.
Although, given that we have that one water tank on Nutmeg, that would be a savings on that site, that we don't have anything sort of saving us money right now on the South Face site. Although, in time, if something like solar came about, we could save money that way.
Correct.
Got it. Also, in terms of the 218 vote that we passed in 2014, and we wanted to raise $58 million, I think, approximately, for our wastewater project. Excuse me. How much of that has been raised, and what are we doing with it?
I don't have the exact number in my head for the number.
And I don't want to nail you to the spot, but just maybe approximate.
So we have approximately $6 million in our accumulation fund for wastewater. That money is to be used for wastewater capital projects and the major wastewater capital project, the WRF project. The $59-ish million that was needed to be collected through those rates was going to be collected over 30 years. So we're just at the very beginning of that. There was not enough time, given our rate structure, to collect $50-ish million in 4 years.
Did we not get into the same sort of situation? I think it was around 2006, 2008, when we were talking about the 41 site, and we were raising money that we didn't use on a new wharf there, and then, so we instead we started using that those monies, accumulated funds, for capital projects around town. And then, if we did, and I think we did, is there any way to limit the funds that are being raised with our higher, with our newer rates, to just be used for our new wharf facility?
Can I ask you a question? You said capital projects around town.
What I mean by that is capital projects for sewer,
okay,
sewer capital.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So necessarily built into the rate structure is needed replacement and repairs for our sewer facilities. I would, again, not recommend that we not do anything to the rest of the system until we pay back in 30 years that loan. We would have a very dilapidated system. Over the past 4 years, we have reconstructed two lift stations, major rebuild on a third lift station, made many repairs in the collection system. Those are all necessary repairs. We've heard public comment before about our leaking wastewater collection system. It's true. It leaks mainly out of the system, into the and under surrounding soil. So we're getting we're getting water coming into the system from the surrounding soil because of cracks in the pipe. That causes us to need to build larger equalization, larger pump stations at our WRF facility. These are necessary repairs that we should be doing on a regular basis to maintain our system.
Okay, thank you.
Great, Matt. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Rob, for the overview, and thanks for dividing it up into the sections. Different meetings, I think that's helpful. Who would be responsible for scheduling the WRF CAC meetings? Who makes the call?
It can happen a couple of different ways. There could be direction from council that they want to see a specific thing go back to through WRF CAC, or more typically, we would see a technical issue, for example, the force main routing issue, and schedule that once we had that technical analysis done by the design consultant for our WRF CAC to review.
Has anybody indicated to you that it would be important to discontinue the WRF CAC, or that they would not be necessary in the future?
I've not heard that from anybody.
Okay.
Well, hopefully it will be unnecessary when this project is completed.
That's true. Yeah. Hopefully, yeah, in maybe 2 years or so, huh? On your page number 141 of 145 on your accelerated approach, could you just explain, since you're recommending it, how you're going to, or how we could mitigate the risks that you've outlined there. I understand the benefit, but the increased risk could limit the number of proposers, potentially resulting in higher costs for the city and less certainty in proposed project costs, et cetera. Could you just speak to the mitigation of this recommended approach?
Sure. There's a couple of risk issues. There's increased costs due to unknowns with the project. We'll not have completed the CEQA process before going to full RFP with it, and we'll be asking those design build teams to do rather detailed designs through their proposal process to get us those costs. We'll be fairly far along with the environmental review process, and we would include an allowance for environmental mitigation measures that would be capped. And then if there was any unknown, we would go through the change order process for that. But we believe that we can very well identify the potential for environmental mitigation measures. The risk of fewer than desired bidders on the project, after speaking with since the publication of this report and speaking with a few of the major players, they don't view that as very much of a risk. They know the city has to build something, and we've chosen the design build path to approach that with. They will make that decision when we put out the RFP. They will base it on what the market is out there. Are there competing design build projects that will take them away from it? But so far, the ones that we've talked to and the ones we've heard that have been information that is brought to us from other sources indicate that we're not scaring anybody away by the process we're choosing.
And so would you say that because of those mitigation strategies, you felt comfortable obviously recommending in item C of the recommendation, item D, that we follow the accelerated implementation schedule?
Yes, that and combined with getting to a guaranteed maximum price sooner that could influence the rate analysis.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Thanks, Marlis.
Sure. Okay, thank you. Well, I have asked you some of these questions in advance, but I think for the sake of the people watching and the people here, I'll ask them publicly as well. In your update, you said that the South Bay location will serve as the utility division main facility for water and wastewater personnel, vehicles, and equipment. And this follows on Red's comment. How many people were you planning, and what kind of vehicles and what equipment, and essentially what portion of the Corp Yard does that represent?
Sure. It's about two-thirds of our Corp Yard facility staffing-wise. The utilities folks make up the lion's share of the employees, 17. There could be some reductions in the staffing levels based on the operational characteristics of the new treatment plant, but it'll be somewhere between 14 and 17, I would say. Typical vehicles will be light trucks, pickup trucks, the service vehicles that are used in the water and wastewater. We have a VACON, a piece of equipment with a large tank on the back of a truck that we use for sewer line cleaning. Backhoe, jetter, dump truck, loader. That's the type of equipment that would be out there. Who would be left at the Corp Yard? And our other remote facility, we have a small workshop on the Embarcadero. The little red two-story building down there at 714 is our facilities workshop. About five employees plus part-timers. So our guys that work on the streets, parks, storm drains, facilities, they would be Matt Bishop's crews. So to put a face with that, would be left at the Corp Yard.
Okay. One of the issues that has come up is letting this RFQ earlier, and it has been also suggested that there's a possibility of issuing a request for expression of interest. Can you talk a little bit about what the difference between those two are, and why you would pick one over the other, and the kind of information that we're going to be getting in that process? So it's clear we're going to get some cost estimates, correct?
Once we get to the RFP stage.
RFP.
We will be following the statutory requirements in the public contracts code for the design build. There are specific requirements that must be contained within an RFQ. RFQ is a request for qualifications. We're asking for firms to tell us why they are qualified to perform this work. We'll be giving them an indication of what the cost estimates would be for this facility as part of it. That's a required item that they we need to have in our RFQ or request for qualifications. I think, as it's been explained to me by one of the potential proposers, what they're calling a request for expression of interest is very similar to it's a blend between the RFP and the RFQ process, but we necessarily need to follow the public contracts code for procurement of design build contractors. Right, Joe?
All right. Thank you. And I think you said earlier that the new rate study would be done in December, but as I look at your timeline, you would not have cost information until the release of the RFQ and presumably getting some responses back. So my understanding is that we wanted the accelerated process so that we can get better cost estimates for the rate study.
Correct.
Is that correct?
What we would be looking at for the December time frame would be looking at some of the assumptions and that the rate consultant used in the preparation of a rate study. For example, is it appropriate to use 3% interest rate when state revolving fund loans haven't been above 2% in quite some time? The same thing with WIFIA. Looking at those types of things to get a sense for what would the existing rate structure support in terms of a capital project cost.
Okay. But we would not actually have Bartles and Wells prepare the rate study until we had some cost estimates.
Correct.
Okay, good. I wanted to verify that. And it would be a definite maximum price that we would be asking for. Is that correct?
We're going to be requesting a guaranteed maximum price.
Okay. And is it a possibility that we could apply for the EPA WIFIA loan before we go out to the 218, or?
Based on what I've read for the submittal guidelines, I would say no. We have to show that we can pay back a loan before we apply for it.
All right. And we the council received an estimate of some operational costs that was prepared by an engineering firm, and I'm just wondering, they were arguing that the operational costs are going to be substantially higher at South Bay than our team estimated. I'm wondering if you can address that issue and tell us why they might be so different.
I was not able to confer with the gentleman that prepared that cost estimate. I know that we actually modeled the pumping and pipeline the friction losses, pumping head. I believe that there were assumptions made as far as velocities go in the pipe to come up with those costs. We definitely do know it's cheaper to pump to Rigetti than it is to South Bay Boulevard. But I don't believe that was the major factor that made the decision to locate the project at South Bay versus the Rigetti site.
No, you're right about that. There is considerable interest in the Patrick Sparks proposal, and I know that the council has received about a dozen or so emails asking us to look at that. And I know that I personally have looked at that proposal, and I know that I think you have, and also maybe Joe. I'm just wondering if you can tell us why that is not a viable or a realistic solution for us to consider moving forward.
The proposal is a little light on details with what exactly the proposal is, but based on our review of it, the assumption that you could put something at the existing facility under a CEQA exemption and no coastal I'm not going to talk too much about this. I'm going to let Scott or Joe talk more about this, but I've never seen that happen before. It's a development under the Coastal Act. I don't believe that it could be I don't know what. I think it's a misinterpretation of the exemption classification to classify that exempt. And with that, I'm going to ask Scott to maybe add to my failings in land use planning.
I think Rob did a pretty good job. I would think that any project similar to what was discussed as part of Sparks' concept would be development under the Coastal Act, and so then is subject to CEQA, and there are issues out at the site. I don't know what their overall proposal is, so there might be other things they come up with that deal with some of the issues out there, but clearly you're doing development in an area that's subject to flooding and tsunami inundation and those types of things, and those usually require mitigation measures, and then once you get into mitigation measures, you're doing a mitigated negative declaration or an EIR, not an exemption.
And if I can also add, in conversations with the coastal staff, they echoed exactly those sentiments.
Yeah, that was going to be my next follow-up, was whether or not we have consulted with Coastal and what their take was on this. And you just, yeah. Well, and I read it also, and it suggested that you could only get an exemption if it was consistent with your general plan, which this is not our current location, and if there were no environmental hazards or affected, and that seems obvious that that's not true in this case. There's serious environmental issues involved with the current location, so.
Hence the reason Coastal denied the application to redevelop the plant in the current location.
Right. We've already had one denial, and we've, yes, okay.
And if I may just add to that, I think some of the confusion is perhaps in the way the documents were written by that gentleman. There's two paths that we're dealing with. There's Coastal Commission path and CEQA path. Even assuming, which I absolutely do not agree with, even assuming we could have an exemption on the CEQA path, doesn't mean we don't have to still go to the commission and get approvals or reviews and approvals from the commission.
Yeah, I would imagine if the House of Juju has to go to the Coastal Commission to get approval for making modifications to a restaurant, it would be necessary building or even whatever you want to call it, a wastewater treatment plant, whether it's a remodel or a completely new building. Okay, I'm going to shift.
I just want to add one more thing to that discussion. We have to remember that there's more work needed than just adding this treatment process at the end of our treatment plant. Some of that construction at the existing plant is 1953 vintage construction. Some of it's 83. I think we would have to do more than just add this process into the mix. We would need to do some major rehab to the existing facilities out there.
Okay, thank you. Just a couple questions related to WRFCAC. How would you envision that we might use WRFCAC moving forward, and especially vis-a-vis the other advisory groups that we have, PWAB and CFAC, and I'm thinking specifically about the rate study.
So I talked a little bit about how we would use WRFCAC for technical studies, EIR review. I think we would use them the same way for the rate analysis. It's both a method to gather additional input from the experts on the panel and then also to disseminate that information to the public. We would use, as I mentioned, the director's report portion of our Public Works Advisory Board meeting to disseminate information, project status, and our Public Works Advisory Board asks questions about that project quite often. CFAC, they really haven't played in the game of the WERF, so I'm not entirely sure that we would involve them. We have members, a member of the CFAC that sits on our WERF CAC, so I believe we would rely on the Economic Subcommittee of WERF CAC to help us review those economic issues.
Okay, thank you. And last question, what do you think would be the best way to revisit the WERF goals and ensure that they kind of reflect where we currently are?
We went through a process to establish those goals a couple of years ago. Throughout the process, we've made minor changes to those goals along. I think the approach would be to package up all those changes and present those back to council to make sure that we understand, as we move forward with this project, that we're reflecting what council direction has been.
Okay. And can we do that quickly?
We're proposing to do that. What date did I say? Soon.
At our next meeting.
At our next meeting, yes.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you. I know Scott stepped out, but are we going to pursue this project with the county's LCP?
Yes.
Okay.
The county's LCP anticipates wastewater treatment facilities in the agricultural zoned lands. It was recommended to us from Coastal Commission to pursue it through the county, at least through land use entitlements, prior to proceeding to annexation. So one scenario could be that we would entitle the property in the county, annex it, and go through the building permit portion. That was air quotes, because technically we don't need a building permit for this public facility. The building permit process through the city.
So I guess I wasn't prepared for that part of the response as far as annexing it and then continuing with the county's LCP. I guess if we are pursuing the project with the county's LCP, I thought we would be doing the entire project through the county's LCP, and when all that was finaled and permitted and approved, we would do the project with the county's LCP, and then once the permit was issued, we would do the annex. It would kind of be a follow-up thing. So how would, if we annex it, wouldn't then it then fall under our own LCP?
No, because the land use entitlements would have already been granted through the county.
Okay.
It's been done on other projects in the county where annexations are involved.
Right. Got it. Thanks. And then as far as the WIFIA goes, you were talking about with Marlis's question about from what you understand with the WIFIA loan, we can't do the two. We need to complete the 218 beforehand. Is what you were referring to?
We need to show how we can basically pay back that loan as part of the application process.
So I guess my question is, have we talked to a person from WIFIA and asked, you know, those questions directly?
We have a schedule. It is one of the items on their application checklist to show how you are going to. There are many ways to show how you can pay back a loan. Some agencies pledge their general fund against it, that they will guarantee payback of that loan,
but
with or without rates.
But to answer the question, Marlis was asking, can we do this before we have the 218? And your response was, from what I've read, at this point, no, we have to show how we can do that with the 218 vote. And my question was, from what you've read, yes, but has there been an actual conversation?
No, we have not had it. But it is on their application that you show how you're going to pay back the loan. So,
okay. Got it. And then as far as the timeline goes, I was asking earlier about, so we have got the traditional approach and then the accelerated approach. And, it's just a timeline.
Yeah, there's not much difference between the two of them.
Right.
It's a timeline. In the presentation, I pulled out some key council action dates so that we could see those.
And so the action dates in the body of the staff report, those are, so what I was asking for is decision-making points in the timeline.
Yes, so decision-making points, for example, on October 24th to review and approve the RFQ, the mm-hmm. request for qualifications, and to confirm the project goals. I wrote That's this after right. the publication
sure.
of the report.
So not to overlay this, but the decision point milestones are in the body of the
yes.
staff report, right? And then I guess I have some comments as far as our WIRF-CAC, our Citizens Advisory goes, and CFAC. So I think that concludes my questions at this point. Goals were asked. Okay. With that, we'll stop there with questions from council, and I'll move to our public comment and open up our public comment. First speaker, Barry Brannon. And then Cynthia Hawley. Welcome, Barry.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. We're talking about rates, and it was a very interesting subject to talk about how we did the rates. Back maybe 8 or 9 years ago, we had some consultants come in and said, okay, we're going to rebuild the facility down on Atascadero Road, and we think it's going to cost about this much money, and you need to have a rate structure that looks like this. So we have a current rate structure that's producing about $6 million a year, I believe. So at this present time, we have had a proposal, or I have listened to a proposal from a firm that builds these things. It says, you know what? That money that you approved was so expensive, so over high way back then, that even 8 years later, we can use that same amount of money and build you a plant. And we can build you a plant that's 4 miles further from where the existing plant was. It's going to have a lift station, and it's going to have a clean water reclamation facility. So my point is that the rates that these consultants give us is so far in the sky so that they can build in their costs and make it become the reality. And I don't believe that by helping and letting the consultants go ahead and say, yeah, it's going to cost this much, and this is what your rates are going to be, and therefore you've got to raise your 218 for more money, is appropriate. You've got the cart before the horse. You need to know what it's going to cost. You say you can't do this? I don't think that's true. I'd like to have it more clear. I know if I were building a wastewater treatment plant, I'd say, hey, guys, I don't know how to build one of these before. I've never built one. I'd love to build one. It'd be fun to do it. But I need to get, I'd get 5 or 6 guys and say, okay, you tell me how to do it and give me some prices to do it. And I'll stop. But I also, I don't understand why we're going down the pipeline down Quintana Boulevard. You're going to destroy the businesses there. You're going to tear up Albertson's business and you're going to destroy the sales tax revenue. So that's not the place to put the pipeline. The light went off.
Thanks, Barry. Cynthia Hawley. And then John Mano.
Cynthia Hawley. I barely know where to start with this. First of all, this is identified as an agendized as water reclamation project update. There's no agendized action, although you're being asked to direct staff to follow the accelerated implementation schedule described herein. That's a decision, and that's an action that you're being asked to take, and it has not been agendized properly. In terms of the 5 acres, you have the power of eminent domain. You don't have to buy, 28 acres and spend $300,000 instead of $50,000. And it's very insulting to hear staff say that given the ultimate cost of this project, that's not significant, the difference between $300,000 and $50,000. You can't legally raise rates for an identified project and spend it on infrastructure repairs, and that is really distressing to hear, that some of that money that was raised for Proposition 218 funds for a new plant has been spent on infrastructure repairs. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that sounds that's what I thought I heard. And also, dismissing the Wharf CAC, you say it's because of no action taken. Well, tonight's an action taken. And what it looks like to me, step by step, is everything that's happening here is an elimination of public participation. Because this meeting wasn't properly agendized as a public hearing and notified to people that you were going to take some action in relation to accelerating implementation of a schedule. And you haven't even approved a project yet. You've got a presentation of project alternatives, but since the presentation of project alternatives, I have not heard of any project that you have accepted, that you've approved. You cannot get 218 funds unless you have a project that you have approved in public, and that public approval. And that project specifically comes up with funds to pay for that specific project. You do have the cart before the horse. Until you get a project, you cannot go forward with this.
Thank you. John Mino, and then Alice Kolb.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and council members. I own and operate a cattle business on the property, which is directly adjacent to the proposed facility on South Bay Boulevard. Due to the nature of the agricultural business, it is important to limit the project's footprint and access impact. The staff report suggests that the water reclamation facility is going to include accommodations for the city's entire water and sewer operations. The WRF facility costs could be reduced by keeping all non-essential employees and their vehicles at a more central location to where their work actually occurs. Further, employees and offices are not directly related to the operation and maintenance of the facility are not allowed in the coastal agricultural zone. Access road size is another concern. The facility's master plan indicates that the relatively long main access road is going to have a paved surface, including shoulders, of 44 feet in width, with a total easement of 60 feet. By comparison, the county road, which I live on, has a paved width of approximately 20 feet, with an easement of 40 feet. County roads like this have served cattle trucks, hay trucks, dump trucks, and residential traffic for decades. Certainly, the 22-foot-wide access roads also mentioned within the facility should be sufficiently wide to serve the needs of the handful of employees and occasional truck that visit. Costs and water runoff could be reduced, and agricultural land could be protected without such extravagant paving taking place. Reducing the size of the facility and the amount of land paved over would also make buffering the property from existing agriculture more feasible. A further concern is the access from South Bay Boulevard to the site. My property boundary extends to the approximate center line of the existing paved street to Casa de Flores. My understanding is that the city intends to avoid my property to access a new facility. I have not seen any drawings regarding how this would occur. I suspect, however, if this is the case, moving the existing driveway could involve Caltrans and realignment of traffic from Highway 1 and South Bay Boulevard. This whole process could be quite expensive and time-consuming. The council should also be aware that the State Coastal Conservancy invested a substantial sum to purchase an easement on my property to protect the viewshed from Highway 1 and the water quality of the bay. I will keep them apprised of whatever path the city takes. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Alice Cole.
My name is Alice Culp. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm here because I'm addressing some public comments that were made regarding the cost of the sewer. There's a long history of reasons why the wastewater treatment facility will be expensive, and they have little to do with neighborhood resistance. Some of these include the mishandling of the Rancho Colina option, the loss of a partnership with Cayucas, and the time-consuming, detailed investigations of unlikely sites. In a letter to the Tribune last week, Councilmember McPherson blamed my neighborhood for the high cost of the sewer and said that we should be willing to give up our objections and sacrifice our quality of life for the good of the rest of the city. This was an unnecessary, divisive thing to do, placing neighbor against neighbor. All property owners in the city deserve to be treated equally. If another site were being considered that was 600 feet from an existing neighborhood, I would be speaking in defense of any residents near that site as well. This is not a not in my neighborhood issue. This is a not in anyone's neighborhood issue. Later in the week, Councilmember Heading was quoted in the Bay News. The neighbors of Vergetti are mean. I am disappointed that an elected council member would use this term to describe citizens who stood up in defense of our neighborhood. Members of the public are encouraged by the city council to be civil in their comments before the council, and we also have a right to be treated with respect when we disagree with you, whether at a public meeting or in the media. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice. I don't have any more speaker slips. And looking out in the audience, seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council and staff. And just want to, there's a couple things I just want to clarify for the record. Ms. Holly was talking about the noticing of the meeting, some details there. Did you capture all that?
From what I understood, she believes that the items that you're being asked about tonight were not properly agendized, and the agenda, although the title doesn't include everything that the recommendation does, the agenda that was given to the public and posted includes all the actions that Mr. Leivick explained. So I'm confused as to what the issue is.
In other words, legally we're posted correctly and we're going to move forward on correct actions.
Yes.
Okay. And then how about the driveway for Mr. Mino, his comments
that,
there?
That's something we haven't talked about very much since the peer review, but that was another one of their recommendations, was to reduce that access road width to the minimum required. So that was another one of the cost savings and measures.
The property line, as he was, there were some discussions on where the property lines intersect and things.
We are currently working on the alignment for the access road and would prefer to keep it on one property versus straddling two properties.
Okay. Any other follow-up that council wanted to do on anything? Seeing none.
Just want to add something to yes, we will be working with Caltrans on not only that issue, but we'll have to cross the highway to get piping back and forth.
Okay, great. Thanks. Marlis, you want to lead us off on discussion?
Well, I certainly do support the accelerated implementation schedule as proposed, provided that it does help to get us a more accurate estimate of costs prior to considering a rate increase. I truly hope that we have enough money in the current rate structure to pay for the new plant, but that's what the RFP process will determine. And when people have an opportunity to comment on it and to put in their bid, we'll know if that will happen. And I hope that it is the case. I think we all hope that. I appreciate the energy and time that WRFCAC has put in, and I thank them for their input. But now that we're kind of on an accelerated path and we need to make up time and major decisions need to be made, I think we need to schedule their meetings as needed. So I'm concurring with the staff recommendations. I'm happy to hear that we are going to hear or see a draft of revised goals at the next council meeting, because I think we need that before we move forward. I would also like to see, and you've already done that, and I'd like to get a copy of that slide that shows the decision points for council in the process, because I think that will be very helpful for us. And so I'm happy that now we've clarified the rate study, and I think that's all of my comments.
Okay, great. John?
Thanks, Rob, for the information and the input. To clarify a couple of things, one, Mr. Brannon makes an excellent point. You need to know the cost before you even consider a 218. I have shouted that a number of times, and staff's proposal tonight does that. In essence, if we accept the accelerated implementation schedule before any 218 process is considered, an RFP will be let, and project costs will be known. That, in conjunction with my recommendation at the last meeting to have not the rate consultant update the 2015 218B pro forma, but our financial experts internally to look at it to assess the assumptions that were made to determine what the future savings may well be in terms of accumulation of reserve funds is an important component of this that will lead us to, I think, a decision on whether we need to go out for a 218 or not. So I'm not even thinking about a date for a 218 till such time as we know what the project costs are going to be and the current rate study is looked at internally from a financial standpoint, not redone by the consultant, because that's not the intent. That will lend itself to us making a decision, I think, from a well-educated standpoint that will provide us with information that is necessary from not only a financial but a practical scheduling standpoint to minimize cost to the community. That, for many of us, I believe, on the council and for the community, is considered to be goal number one. And it so happens that it's stated as goal number one when you look at the goals that we've established. So with that, I also agree. I support the accelerated schedule. I thank Mr. Leibig for listening to the input that was given and recommending that, and also outlining the mitigation strategies for some of the risk that we do take with that, because I think it's important to mitigate that risk. I'm torn on the WRFCAC recommendation because I think public input is extremely important, and you've collected a number of experts on that committee that have served us well in the past, and there will be some important things in the future to be considered that I think they will also serve us well. Indeed, the Citizens Finance Committee has not had the ability, because of internal staffing within the finance department here at the city, but also with other priorities that have been established by the chair in conjunction with her committee, to look at this project from a financial standpoint, nor were they tasked to do that. That has been a function of WRFCAC. And so the reason I'm hesitating, supporting a PRN, if you will, or an as-needed schedule for WRFCAC, is because I think the financial review subcommittee needs to be there, needs to remain active, and needs to vet all of the financial information that will be coming here. For that reason, I can't support an as-needed schedule for WharfCAC. I think it should be routine. It may not meet as often. There may not be the need to do that. Staff, in conjunction with the chair, can determine when meetings need not be actually occur, even though they may be scheduled, or I should say canceled, I guess. But I would hate to do away with the only financial review portion of the project that we have is really with the WharfCAC right now from a citizen standpoint. Thusly, I couldn't support that specific recommendation. I would rather have them meet and then cancel as necessary. Thanks.
Matt?
Yes, I too agree that the accelerated path is the way to go. The idea is to control costs, and we're really getting close to this as we narrow this down. And John makes a very good point. Once we get these costs down, we're going to find out if and when 218 and how much we would need with that 218 would be. The rate study is imperative. We need to get that done. And WharfCAC, I also agree with John in terms of having this citizen oversight. We need that not just for our staff, but also for community outreach. And that economic outreach part of the WharfCAC is very much needed, again, for those two different reasons. Let me see. And I think looking at the various recommendations and everything that else that's been said, I think that's it.
Thanks, Red.
I, too, agree with my colleagues, and I agree with John and Matt about the WharfCAC, that it's good to go ahead and schedule regular meetings and cancel them if we don't have an agenda for them to follow, although I don't see how that actually differs from meeting as needed, but I'm okay with that. Mr. Brannon mentioned that he has spoken to a contractor who says that they can build the wharf for us within the existing 218. And I hope that Mr. Brannon will continue to urge that contractor to participate in our RFP process. I suspect it's the same contractor that I have been talking to who told me that it can be built within the 218, and I am encouraging that contractor to participate in the RFP. So that's all.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for bringing the staff report back for us and reviewing the timeline, considering the process in which we've come to selecting the preferred site. And the accelerated timeline is a necessity to keep things moving forward. Part of my discussion, and I appreciate having the WharfCAC as needed recommendation on there. But I'll say this first. I think I'm very grateful and thankful for the WharfCAC committee that's done the work that they have. We do have a talented board, and they've done great work for us. I feel we're in a position where if there's decisions that need to be made to move this project forward, then they need to come to council to keep it moving forward. And if it means that we are processing ourselves with additional layer of a citizens advisory committee, then those decisions need to come to council, and we need to keep the project moving forward. Those are my comments as far as maintaining a timeline and the value of our WharfCAC, which I appreciate. The WharfCAC was formed and requested by the city council years ago for the purpose of assisting in, and the idea was, and we were very fortunate to get the depth of people that we did, both engineers, finance, environmental. So it's a really good balance, and they provided really good input. So I wouldn't want to lose that. But at this point, I think that we have to stick to that timeline. And if it means that decisions are coming straight to us, then I think that's what we need to do. I think there could be also the opportunity to consider using the WRF CAC to, with regular meetings, with updates, and ensuring that the WRF CAC review the updates and provide guidance on informational flyers in our water bills. It's been suggested by one of our WRF CAC members, and how we are continuing to get the message out there. Not everybody has a computer, but we do get water bills, and the suggestion of being able to provide updates, regular updates in our water bill, I think is one of value, and I think perhaps that's a good way of utilizing our WRF CAC committee, is to make sure that we're, because they have been involved in the site, the project from the beginning, we can utilize their expertise and knowledge in making sure that information is appropriate, and developing that information to be put out in a flyer to keep the project out in front and for people to understand. And I think that's really important, because we hear comments, and I think it's clear to me that it's a complex issue, and many in the community don't understand the process or don't understand exactly how we're getting through all these milestones. So I guess I would support the regular schedule, I feel we need to have a strong consensus from council that we're committed to meeting that accelerated timeline. And if critical decisions need to be made, and we have to meet that timeline, then there's nothing wrong with having those decisions come straight to council before going to the WRF CAC, in my view. And I think that's one that I would expect that we would have a discussion with the rest of council. The goals, I'm glad to hear that the comments about the goals and how we've the goals have been refined through this process, and I'm excited to see those come back, and those will come back to us. And as far as the subcommittee goes, Marlis and myself serve on that subcommittee. I just want to make sure that the council, so Marlis and I as a subcommittee have been able to meet with staff on different issues as a way to bounce off those council perspective. And unless there was a different will of the council, then I just want to reinforce that subcommittee is a value, and that if there's any specific concerns or direction from council, that I just wanted to revisit that and make sure we're moving forward on that. Our Citizen Advisory Committee, going back to the WRF CAC, it is our board. We want to make sure that they're valued, but we have to direct the process, and that I would agree is the accelerated process. I think there's consensus on that, so we need to keep it moving forward. So with that, I agree with the recommendations as far as the accelerated schedule. We have D in the recommendation, modify the Water Reclamation Citizens Advisory Committee as needed. It seems like there's consensus to keep it on a regular meeting. I threw out some other thoughts on how that could be utilized on a regular basis if there's not necessarily an action item, but to ensure that information is distributed out to the community, and we make sure that we keep a good message going out to the community. I think that's important. Those are my comments. I think we've covered pretty much the recommendation. We could take a motion on any of those, unless there's specific discussions on some of the comments that all of us have made.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, in a sense, I think that I agree with Red in that there isn't really that much difference between as needed or scheduling a monthly meeting and then canceling it if there is no decision to make. So I think that was really the meaning behind as needed, i.e. not a regularly scheduled meeting if there's nothing to meet about. And I really do agree with you, Jamie, that we have to keep this process moving. And if we need to make a decision and it needs to come directly to council, hopefully the citizens will understand that and come to council to give their concerns without first attending a WRFCAC meeting. I agree with you, John, that the financial oversight piece is something that WRFCAC could do, but I'm hopefully with a new finance director, the city staff can get a better handle on that. And I know that Craig made a stab at it and is started to implement a better process of keeping control on the costs, and that hopefully that will continue moving forward, and we ensure that that happens. But I can appreciate the comment about WRFCAC also looking at it. That's what I'd like to add.
So I would I first respond to, I think, your question, Mayor, about the subcommittee, the WRF subcommittee, or it's really, is it not the JPA subcommittee, or is it one and the same?
One and the same.
So I think it's important for it to continue. I think it that you do have the advantage of being able to meet with certain regulatory bodies as an entity representing the council, that remains very important. And I think for that function alone, it's critical. However, I would suggest that the subcommittee consider JPA meetings if they're able to be scheduled, because I think there are issues with the existing plan that need to be discussed. And I've not heard a report back, I can't remember when, with regard to a JPA meeting and what's happening there. And I know in my discussion, as I mentioned at the last meeting, with staff, well, Mr. Enns and staff, when we were vetting sites, there were some issues of concern that they began to address with me, and I put my hand up and said, whoa, that's a JPA issue. And with that being said, I think it would be important, and I would encourage you to meet and bring a report back to us for that. Secondarily, thank you, Marlis, for your comments on the WRFCAC. I think staff review internally of financial issues is staff. What I'm really looking for is a public review, and the WRFCAC is a public body. And so that was the differentiation there. And I think the importance of having it on the calendar says that if it's a reminder that if there is something that needs to go, that that it will happen as a meeting, but that if there's nothing that needs to go, then it can be canceled. And so I would keep my recommendation. So with that being said, I would move that we direct staff to follow the accelerated implementation schedule directed or described, I should say, in agenda item C2, as outlined by Mr. Leivick, and also that we continue to schedule routine meetings of the WRF CAC subcommittee, and that if there were issues that needed to come to council in the event that a WRFCAC meeting could not be scheduled and or convened prior, that were critical issues, that those be brought to council and dealt with at that level, hopefully mitigating some of the issues of concern.
I'll second that motion.
For discussion?
Yes.
So, motion by Mr. Headings, second by Marlis. Discussion, Marlis? So I just want to be clear. So on the Citizens Advisory Committee and your motion in having it come back, come to council if there can't be a Citizens Advisory Committee convened. I'm not sure I followed you on that.
Sure, let me explain. If there was a routine schedule for WRFCAC meeting to occur on a date certain, and there was a critical item that needed to be discussed and decisions made prior to that meeting being convened and occurring, that those items could be brought directly to council if we met prior to the Wharf CAC meeting. In other words, not having to wait for them to meet to consider an item that would be critical. I was trying to mitigate the concern about the council being able to, you know, as always, make decisions if necessary before a Wharf CAC meeting occurred, and I was trying to provide a means for that. I don't know if that was clear,
okay.
But that
I
was
guess,
the intent.
So to continue the discussion, I guess my feeling is the goal should be to meet an accelerated time schedule and process. And I think the priority, my feeling, and I just want to make sure that however this is, works out, that the priority is to meet that timeline. And if it council, if it needs to come to council, the priority is for it to come to council for those decisions and not to delay or jeopardize the timeline going to the Citizens Advisory Committee. If it's just an action item that's needed by council, you know, I think the value of having our Wharf CAC there for technical issues and those types of items that weigh in and weigh out are great. But if it's just a decision item that needs to be done, then the priority, in my view, is to keep it on schedule and keep the accelerated schedule going. And I think that's the message that should be for staff. As things are working out, then they know, okay, well, the priority is to keep this going, and so therefore we're going to take it to council. I just want to – that's what – I want to make sure that either we're agreeing on that or that's part of your motion, and I wasn't sure about that.
We're agreeing, and that's part of my motion.
Okay.
I guess it's also a message, as you said, to staff to make sure that that happens, and I think I trust that staff's going to do that. They're going to bring it to us if we need a decision prior to a Wharf CAC meeting occurring, and I think I said that.
Okay.
But anyway,
any further,
I agree.
Any further discussion? None? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion carries. And then one other thing that so I discussed the part about the flyer as far as information and Wharf CAC and things like that, as far as council's feeling on informational and having you know, task our Wharf CAC with working on information and flyers to message this project and all the information to the public. So just want to make sure that if there's agreement to that, that there's consensus and staff knows that that's what we'd want to do. So I'm just looking for feedback and agreement.
I agree that flyer would go far to aid people who are not necessarily technologically savvy or users, and so that would be just another means of reaching the public.
Okay.
I agree. The more communication, the better.
Yeah.
So I do concur with that, and I'm not sure if that's something. I mean, we have the website that's routinely updated. We have the newsletter that goes out quarterly, PRN, as needed.
Yes,
as needed. And this would be maybe a better way to get more routine information to people. So I'd support it, too.
Okay.
I'm fine with that.
Yes.
Okay.
I think we need a communication plan, actually. I'd like to see a real plan where we really understand exactly how we're going to communicate and have it almost written down so we know what kinds of decisions we want to communicate to the public. And I think it's a good idea to have Wharf CAC at least look at those before they go out. I'm sure staff will prepare them.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about the plan part of it. I mean, you know, all it's a, you know, just about the information as we're developing
it, we
need to get it out there.
Even
as simple as fact check. You know, there could be something out in the community, and we can work on fact checking and just continue to message the information out to the community.
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think we need a motion on that. We're good to go. We agree.
Yeah.
Okay, we got full consensus on that. Anything else for motions?
Well, do we need a motion on bringing the goals back at the next meeting, or is that just
part
of the plan?
That was part of our
plan.
I think that's part of our overall schedule.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
And my comments about the subcommittee and the JPA meeting were advisory.
Comment on that. Just thanks for bringing that back up. You know, the Rob, as far as JPAs, that's not necessarily a subcommittee item. The JPA, as far as coming back, I mean, I know maybe you should relay that, but my understanding is we have made requests for a JPA meeting.
We've made requests based on our responses over a few months of making those requests. We stopped making those requests and waiting for Cayucas to it was always met with, we're not ready to meet yet. So the last communication was, let us know when you feel that a JPA meeting is necessary. We can reach out to Cayucas again and double check.
And so, to be clear, there's no bylaws or anything that says how we convene a meeting together, the requirements of how many meetings we're supposed to have, or anything else.
There is a requirement that if you call a meeting and they don't show up, that's a violation of the JPA, but I'm not sure what the enforcement of that is. But maybe an approach would be to for staff or for the mayor to send a request to the board and the board chair saying, it's been a while since we met. Why don't we meet just so we can all have a status update on where we both are, so we can start projecting and thinking about what we're going to do for the future, because obviously there's a lot of decisions that are going to have to be made by both entities as we get closer to each of them having their own wharf.
And I think more importantly to John's, you know, thanks for our staff at the treatment plant for keeping the plant operating safely. We did go through a five-year maintenance and repair program to investment to keep the plant operational safely for a period of time. So we've continued to make those investments, understanding that we just want to make the investments to keep it operating, but I guess I should go into analogies, but we want to make sure it's running safely. And so we, during our regular course of JPA meetings, we're having updates and discussions on the operational portion of the facility and any particular needs, which is something we haven't done. So, you know, I would be supportive of reaching out to Cayucas and asking for a JPA where we can just do, you know, basically an update and discussion on condition of the plant and any necessary needs.
If there's a consensus on the council doing that, then the invitation or the request we make of them could be, this is from the council, it's not just from a staff.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. We're
shaking my head, yes.
Yep, that's good. So we've got unanimous consensus.
Does that require a motion? Okay.
Okay, we're good. Okay. All right. Okay, anything else? Done? Okay, we can conclude item C2. Item C2 is concluded. That'll conclude the agenda for this evening. Council declaration of future agenda items. I've got one. I'd like to agendize a discussion to remove Richard Sadowski from his advisory board positions as planning commissioner and the WRF Citizens Advisory Committee. And their request would be to conduct a special meeting on the 23rd of October at 4:30. And that's my agenda item, and looking for support for that agenda item. October 23rd. If there's no support, then there won't be agenda.
I would support it for discussion purposes, yes. So
need three people to agendize it.
I would also.
So we have three people supporting the agenda item. Anybody else to support? So we have three people that support agendizing it? Okay. So we'd agendize the item and then have a special meeting on the 23rd at 4:30. and we need to coordinate with council and making sure that there's proper availability for that. And then we'd need to contact Mr. Sadowski. Any other agenda items? None? Okay. With that, our next City Council meeting is Tuesday, October 24th at 6 p.m. right here at 209 Surf Street. And with that, we'll adjourn the meeting.